Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Bold is the one who dares to say what he thinks. As about 15%, a little over 15% of the federal government is, quote, shut down, real Republicans want Obamacare to slow down. Actually, we want it dead. But in a government divided by factionalism, you often get a little less than what you want. And that's true on both sides. The White House and the Democrats have forced a showdown with the Republicans because of the conservative Tea Party Liberty Coalition led by men like Cruz, Lee, Paul, Woodall, Gohmert, Hulskamp, and Issa, as well as a tsunami of conservative, liberty-minded grassroots. As this very partial shutdown continues, more and more lies are being exposed, and no amount of foreign military action, legitimate, fabricated, or just well-timed, is going to distract us. The rhinos and the left are trying to tie the showdown, the continuing resolution, the shutdown, the Obamacare negotiations into the debt ceiling negotiation, which is allegedly happening around October 17th. We actually hit it in May, but we're about to run out of, quote, extraordinary fake money to float the bloated federal Leviathan. So bloated, in fact, that they can hire 800,000 non-essential employees and pay them for staying home. Bullcrap. The debt ceiling has nothing to do with the continuing resolution. It has nothing to do with Obamacare, and it has nothing to do with the shutdown. And not raising it does not cause default. The politicians lie to you, and the media feeds it to you. Grab your boots and your shovel. We've got some swill to slog through. This media spin down, spinning the news for the White House while dumbing down the facts, is easy to expose if you get good data and you apply some common sense and critical thinking. Partial government shutdowns are a necessary part of forcing negotiations between opposing factions, given the constitutional separation of powers. In fact, this is shutdown number 18. The last one was over 15 years ago, and Tip O'Neill, a Democrat Speaker of the House, used it 12 times. It forces government to slow down, deliberate, negotiate, and it checks swift bipartisan consensus on screwing you. It has been too long since there was a real conflict between the socialists, who called themselves Democrats, the corporatists, who called themselves Republican, and those who actually follow the Constitution, these days called Tea Party anarchist, hostage-taking, bomb-strapping, and other pejoratives. It is imperative that the Rhino GOP not cave on this CR negotiation, and only you can make them hold the line. Don't let up. This is how we win the advancement of liberty. Look, in a game of chicken, you win if you don't flinch. Conservatives won in 1995, last time there was a shutdown, well, 96, because Newt Gingrich, Speaker of the House, didn't flinch, and Clinton, who's smarter and more competent than the current POTUS, was brought to the negotiating table after 21 days of shutdown, and the leftist ratchet of government was moved back towards the right. Now is not the time to flinch. Now is the time to strike a victory for liberty. If you love liberty and the Constitution that protects it, whether you're an independent American of good conscience, Occupy, Tea Party, conservative, libertarian, or whatever, honest liberal, or whatever other labor you want to call yourself, it is important to send a grassroots tsunami to the imperial city and demand limited government. This is not a partisan or ideological issue. It is not about health care nor insurance reform, nor reopening the 15% of government that's temporarily closed, nor defaulting on the fabricated debt. This is a matter of survival. Are we turning back toward the republic or continuing the decline of this perilous nation, accelerating down the road to serfdom in a police state at home and empire abroad? Liberty is yours to lose. Will you fight? Will you defend the Constitution and stand with those who are? Send a tsunami to the Imperial City. You are live with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, where, interestingly enough, the traffic has been quite light this week, and I'm not complaining about this at all, even though I know some people who have been forced to stay home because of the partial shutdown. They'll be back at work soon enough, and I am joined by our special guest host, Chris, you're live with Rex.
Arg.
Arg. You got your club? You ready to beat somebody?
My.
You sound...
God.
It's what crazy, isn't it?
Well,
debt
yeah,
ceiling.
It's crazy
debt
because
ceiling.
It's... Oh, yeah, right. Debt ceiling. I mean, I guess the thing that you have to ask yourself is, have you become a squish since 9/11? Or do you still believe in America? That's really what it boils down to, because bottom line is game is on. And I really, you know, following this thing is exhausting, yes, but pretty soon you start to see the patterns and the BS, you know, meter starts to fly and the lies start getting exposed. And at the same time, we have people that are stupid enough to go on the website and give their information out. And all those stories are starting to fly. So really, right now, it's a matter of staying focused, keeping it simple, keeping your eyes focused on the important things. It is just mind-boggling to me how we can discuss a debt ceiling without any debate, how we can discuss the fact that the president has numerous times against the law, you know, the proper law of the land, changed the health care bill, you know, to fit certain parameters or to protect certain people or to buy off certain people, however you want to look at it. And it just keeps going on. You know, people just don't get it, Rex. It's frustrating, you know, to think that. I mean, I look at this stuff with these shutdowns. Like one of the last articles I posted was this fancy restaurant in California got shut down because their building is on federal land. You know, it's off the side of the road. You know what I mean? It's as you're driving down the highway. And
how dare they?
Yeah, and it's just amazing to me that people can't look at all of these things they're doing with the parks, with the memorials, with things like these businesses that are on federal land, you know, whatever the case may be, and look at that and think, if they really, really, really were mad at the American people, what would they do if they're willing to do this? I guess that's a – I haven't seen anybody
that's
really –
That's probably why they got all those guillotines and body bags.
No shit. FEMA camps, whatever else, you know, if you want to go down that highway. But, you know, it is just amazing to me that people don't understand how bad it's gotten, how bold they are with their lies, how bold they are with their actions to make it as difficult as possible. I mean, we just went through the sequester, Rex, you know, and people saw it then, and it all got exposed, and then it went away. You know, the president and his minions were making it as difficult as possible on people that weren't even affected by the sequester. Plus, the sequester was not even a cut. It was a cut in the growth. I don't know how many times Rand Paul said that. We're not cutting anything. You know, all this stuff from air traffic controllers. You know, and that's the thing is that I just wonder if people are getting it. And I know the people we hang out with get it. But I'm wondering if the masses are putting, you know, connecting the dots and understanding the battle that we're fighting. Because, like you said, this is not, number one, it's not about health care. Because you're going to get less health care and you're going to pay more insurance. It's about insurance.
Yep.
And it's about your freedom and your information. We got articles coming out saying that these databases, people's information is already at risk. I mean, come on.
You think?
Oh, my
God. Wait
until
you find
you
out that after you fail to successfully sign up for the exchange, but you gave them all your information, next week check your credit report. You'll probably have 2 new mortgages and 18 new credit cards.
No kidding. To Hector.
You're right. The security issues are a joke. And look, the simple fact is, you know, and we're going to get into all this stuff. We're getting into the debt ceiling in the second hour. The idea that the Republicans wanted to kill Obamacare, yes, that's absolutely true. Then they went for defunding it. And now they've compromised to the point of delaying it, which means that these exchanges will still function.
Yeah.
The exchanges will still be there. The only thing that's going to happen is that you can't be fined or taxed or whatever the hell you want to call it if you don't sign up for these exchanges. So if they're so good, and this, then, you know, as the Democrats love to say, you know, the Republicans want to kill this because people are going to – it's going to work. And people are going to love it
more
than they love it now. Okay, well, if people are going to love it so much, then you shouldn't have to tax them to get them into it. Just run the exchanges for a year, and let's see how many people, you know, sign up. I mean, all 7 million people that you're expecting should probably just jump on board anyway, right? I mean, you don't have to force them into it. So just delay the only thing that you're delaying is the individual mandate. Since Obama's already illegally pretty much delayed everything else, we're
going
to get into that in the second. Yeah, we're going to get into that in the second hour as to, you know, how Obama can, you know, unilaterally start legislating and changing laws. We're going to talk about that. But first, I want to tap into something else you talked about, which was that media angle and all the information. And you're saying that, you know, are the masses getting it? Probably not, because if they're listening to the news, and I don't care if they're listening to MSLSD, Democracy Now!, NPR, or Fox News, it's all the same crap. It's basically spinning this thing as if it's some kind of disaster. The sky is going to fall. You know, there's going to be a whirlwind that's going to suck up the whole planet. I don't know, whatever it is. Somehow shutting down 15% of the federal government is apparently very destructive to the planet and destroys the economy. And I keep hearing people say, the Republicans have shut down the country. Hey, let me break it to you, folks. The federal government is not the country. It's just the federal government. And if it disappeared tomorrow, it wouldn't be anarchy. It wouldn't be chaos. It wouldn't become Somalia, because we've got 50 state governments. Every county has some form of government, and your locality probably has a government too. So guess what? If we wiped out the federal government tomorrow and actually they made good on their promise to shut it down and actually shut it down, you'd still have at least 3 governments to contend with. And frankly, I think that's 3 more than
more
I really
enough.
Want. So I'm happy with those 3. So, you know, relax. It's not anarchy if the federal government disappears, and it's only like 16 or 17% of it that's actually closed. So how are people getting this information? Well, frankly, the masses aren't going to get it, and the committed, you know, still enraptured with the hope we change you bullshit lefties aren't going to get it. The people that you, if you're listening to the show, the people that you have to talk to are Republican voters who in their heart are actually conservative but end up voting for shitbags like McCain and Romney simply because they think there is no other choice. That's who you have to talk to. That's who you have to explain it to. And we've given you a lot of resources. Whenever I post the show on Facebook, if you found the show on Facebook, there's a big picture. If you click on that picture, in the comments I post a lot of articles and clips, most of the things that we use on the show, right there in the comments section. If you want to see them in more detail, just go to the Tex and Rex show page on Facebook and like the page. If you like the page, you will get notifications in your news feed of when we're broadcasting and other action items, like if there's a vote coming up that needs to have calls made, we'll put the phone number out and tell you, you know, what the vote is about. And if we do special shows, like all of September, we did extra shows. Chris and I did four extra shows on Thursday nights focusing specifically on this conservative position against Obamacare that led up to the shutdown, and those are still available for you. So if you go to the Tex and Rex show page on Facebook or join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia, but if you're looking for it on Blog Talk Radio, just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out the Tex and Rex show, and on our page, if you scroll down, every single show we've done is available for you. All you do is click on it, and it plays right in your browser or your mobile device. And if you go below the scrolling graphics and you go, you right-click the download this link to this show or this episode link, you can download an MP3, which you can listen to in your MP3-enabled device. You can burn a CD and take it to your Tea Party meeting, your church meeting, your Campaign for Liberty meeting. I don't care, whatever meeting you go to, your AA meeting, just take it with you and hand it out. And also you can email it to people. That's the only way that this information gets out. We have no advertising budget. In fact, this costs us money to do this show. There is no way anybody's hearing about it unless you tell them. And I want to thank everybody who's been posting the show and tweeting the show and sharing the show. And if you see the show somewhere on Facebook or on Twitter, retweet it or share it. I know you like it, and that's wonderful. Just get it out there and understand, if you share the show, you're not endorsing the show. You're not endorsing everything we're saying. You're merely saying, hey, this is something you should perhaps listen to and see, you know, draw your own conclusions about it. What we're trying to put together here for you is what Fox News alleges to do, fair and balanced, and we're trying to give you a conservative, a really conservative angle on it. And remember something, if it's authentically conservative, it doesn't mean it's Republican. If it's authentically conservative, it actually means it's two-thirds libertarian. So y'all libertarians and conservatives, learn to get along. Our fight right now is with the statists. We can go toe-to-toe later, but right now you've got to build coalitions and get people working together. That's the most important thing right now, because this shutdown is about how the Constitution works. This shutdown is not some kind of hostage-taking, unique, Tea Party-created, psychotic, takeover of government, or as Harry Reid puts it, trying to create anarchy. I mean, you know, honestly, it's insulting to real anarchists to label them as Tea Party, because Tea Party is genuinely about lowering taxes, smaller government, and putting the government back in the box of the Constitution. The Constitution is a government document. Anarchists do not like government documents, so anarchists don't support the Constitution. They would prefer that there be no Constitution and no government. And the 15% shutdown doesn't quite satisfy anarchists or even minarchists. So the simple fact is that a true conservative, especially a true Tea Party conservative, is somebody who supports the Constitution and supports government as a good, provided it is within the confines of the Constitution. In fact, all the founding fathers from Jefferson to Hamilton today would be considered Tea Party, because they would all be in favor of the Constitution. They would also all, well, maybe not Hamilton, but Jefferson would at least be considered a Paul Bott or a Liberty Movement activist. So, you know, keep in mind that the founding fathers established the appropriations and the revenue power, the power of the purse, in the House, because it is the chamber of one of the three branches of government that is closest to the people. It has elections every 2 years. They're all up for election every 2 years, and they are a larger body because they represent more of the people. That's why they put the money there. And so the fact that a, quote, small faction of Tea Party conservatives is holding the government hostage is not true. What they are doing is their job, and their job is to control spending in order to rein in an extra constitutional executive just like the one you have now, and in fact, just like the one you had before him. Agreed, Chris? Would you think that the Founding Fathers would be Tea Party anarchists today?
Yeah. No kidding. With muskets strapped to their chest?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I don't know, man. You and I have probably followed more of this than is healthy. Listening to these Democrats, I've listened to more C-SPAN than I have in my lifetime. I've listened to more Democrats in the last week than I've listened to in my lifetime.
Ever?
And there's a reason I don't listen to them. You know, they're nutcases, and they'll say anything, and they will lie. You know, I have a lot of issues with Republicans also, but not to this degree. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it is just unbelievable what they're saying. And, of course, you have a ton of clips, you know, what was that guy's name? Bush? Oh, yeah, I remember him. But when Bush was president, you know, it was nonstop. They were beating up on him over the budget. They were beating up over him on the debt ceiling. They were beating up over him on the wars. They were, you know, every day, 24/7, they were tearing this apart. Now they're in power, and they're saying we need to raise the debt because raising the debt doesn't really raise the debt. I'm like, what? You know, and Harry Reid. Oh, it's insane.
Let's play duopoly, Chris. Let's play duopoly, Chris, shall we? You be the elephant,
well,
and I'll be the jackass, and we'll see how we can both screw the people while they think we're fighting.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that one thing that's really changed in the last, you know, and not even, you know, 2 years ago, yeah, but really in the last year is the social networks, the YouTube videos. I think it is amazing. You can see something on C-SPAN, or you can hear Rand or Ted Cruz on whatever, CNN. I mean, and within a half hour, that clip is available. And I don't know if you remember,
awesome.
I'm sure you do, but we used to be frustrated to all be hell during the primary because, you know, we'd see a speech somewhere and we'd want to get it out and get it go viral. And you'd spend a day and a half looking for it, waiting for somebody to get it uploaded. Now it's almost instantaneous. And the same thing goes for the talk show hosts, the ones that I like to follow, that I respect. You know, you can almost, you know, they'll do their, you know, 2-3 hour show, but they may have segments of it that are just butt kicking. And because their machines are so much better, and you know, today, they will actually get that clip out. But you know, by the time their show is done. And so you can get your hands on that information so much quicker. And I think that really, truly is the difference that we're facing today. And we saw it with the Second Amendment fight. We saw it with the Syria fight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see it with this. You're going to see it with immigration. You know, I just hope to God people have their heads screwed on straight and they understand the battles that we're fighting in the government, you know, controlling the Internet. Controlling who's a reporter, all these things that are coming down the pike is all coming after you as the grassroots American who's fighting, who's trying to be involved, who's trying to be educated, trying to educate other people, and trying to fight for the things you believe in. Because here's the thing you got to remember. Both sides of this party, both parties, both sides of the same party, burn the Constitution to the ground if it benefits a power surge that they're looking to control. It's that simple. So if you're not diligent and you haven't read the document, and you haven't read the Federalist Papers, and you don't want to have socialized medicine, and you don't want illegal aliens to get your job, you know, become legals and you know, make $50,000 a year, you know, to be here in America. If you don't want these things to happen, then you, not Ted Cruz, not Rand Paul, not Amash, not Gohmert, you have got to educate yourself and educate other people. That's the only, I mean, Ted Cruz has said this every time he speaks. This will not happen if the people don't help, because they're a minority in Congress. Go ahead.
Yep, and Chris, the don'tfundit.com, www.don'tfundit.com, is within 40,000 of striking 2.1 million. So get to www.don'tfundit.com, even though now it's actually don'tdelayit.com, but they didn't change the website, and sign it and get other people to sign it. And I think you touched on a huge point. The social media, the Facebook, the Twitter, the YouTube, all of these things are changing the way things are done, which is why the, quote, alternate media has been infiltrated by a bunch of shills for government. They've got paid trolls out there. They've got Organizing for America douchebags out there. They even use Organizing for America, which is Obama's, you know, campaign arm. They use them to sign up for the exchanges and say, see, we found somebody who had no problem signing up for the exchange. Well, he was paid to do it, and I'm sure you kind of gave him some ins and outs. But they're out there, so you got to keep an eye out. And you got to use your brain a little bit with the alternate media, but there are some really good sources. Obviously, the most important source is the Text and Rec Show, so make sure you share that. But there's also Jeff Green at Alternative Media Television. There's Ben Swan, Josh Tolley. There's a lot of people out there that are making a dent in this. But here's the thing. Not everybody is plugged in yet. The rank-and-file conservative voter who's trying to raise their family, run their business, go to work, is probably for the most part still tuning into Fox News for their information. Maybe they're reading the Washington Times or the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal. Okay, you have to reach out to them. Reach out to them at Republican Party meetings. Reach out to them at your church. Reach out to them at your work. Reach out to them wherever they are, and just let them know that there is a real conservative revolution going on, very similar to what was going on in 94, and they need to be a part of it, and it's happening on social media. And remember, in 94, Gingrich was able to do this. You know, they laughed at him in 79 when he says we're going to get a Republican majority, and it took till 94 to make it happen. And that was done without the World Wide Web. That was done without Twitter. That was done without Facebook. That was done without YouTube. Now it's much more powerful, but the corporatist interests in both parties are far more entrenched, and therefore you have to work that much harder because, as Chris just said, people like Cruz and Paul and Lee and Amash and Gohmert cannot do it unless we do it. And the reason that they keep accusing Ted Cruz of controlling the House is because of you, because you made your calls, because you went to the website, www.don'tfundit.com, and you made a stink in the House that forced little crying tan Johnny Boehner and little Eric Cantnot to turn towards the right because they're afraid of you. And that's what you have to do. If you want to win this fight for the Constitution, for conservatism, which is two-thirds libertarianism, you have to make it more dangerous for these political critters to piss you off than it is for them to piss off their financiers and their backers. That's what you have to do. You have to keep the pressure up. And now is the time to put more pressure on. The hashtag that we're using to get that is don't cave. You got to get the House not to cave. The Senate is already interested in caving. There's 27 little fucking traitors in the Senate that are ready to turn on Cruz and Lee. We're going to talk about that a little bit. You've got to put pressure on all these guys like Jihad Jane McComed and Lindsay Lightness Loafers, Graham Nistie, and Bob Lost His Court Corker. Okay, those are the guys that you got to put pressure on. Why are we doing this? Why are we putting pressure on these rhinos? And they know we call them rhinos. They know we call them squishes. We know they know we call them faux conservatives. What they're pissed off about is that now it's coming to light that all these accusations we've leveled against them are true, and people are getting wind of it. Like you said, we got a lot of clips. There's a lot of information going on. We're going to try to hit the media spin down, and then we're going to try to hit the rhino attack against real conservatives and get into the debt ceiling thing in the second hour and maybe start talking about the unconstitutionality of what's going on. Let's tee it up with one hell of a liberty champ. I got 5 minutes here with the junior senator from Kentucky. Here's Senator Rand Paul.
You have a statement on your website stating that you are, quote, working tirelessly to end this government shutdown. Fact of the matter is there is one way to end the shutdown right now. Have Speaker Boehner put a bill, a clean budget resolution, on the floor of the House. It would pass with Republicans. It would pass with Democrats. Will you call on Speaker Boehner to do that this morning?
We've been putting out clean CRs or continuing resolutions all week. We've been trying to fund government. We've been trying to reopen government. And at every point, Harry Reid said no, he doesn't want to open government.
You've been putting on clean CRs. Nothing, no strings attached.
Clean CRs. Well, yeah. We've been trying to fund different parts of government all week.
Well,
we've passed bill after bill after bill.
Okay, that's a piecemeal approach,
no? No, it's not. It's the same thing. These are clean CRs, meaning that there's no strings attached. We've been passing NIH funding, veterans funding. And here's the thing that people don't realize. That's historically the way it's always been. You pass small appropriation bills so you can look at them individually. It's actually a much better way to run government, because right now you're sticking everything into one bill, and that's why the leverage of shutting the government down occurs. But if you did things appropriately and you passed appropriation bills one at a time, no one would be able to shut down government ever.
Senator,
so really, if Harry Reid had done his job, we wouldn't be in this position at all.
Senator, you were one of the ones early on who said you didn't think a government shutdown was a good idea. However, when House Republicans made the defunding of Obamacare, or even the delay of Obamacare, their sticking point at which they would shut the government down if they didn't get it, didn't they basically make this result inevitable by making that what they took a stand on?
Well, I think you've kind of got it backwards. The House Republicans said they would fund all of government, and they did. They funded all of government short of one program. So they really were never wanting to shut down government over this. They were wanting to fund government.
But come on, they have tried to defund Obamacare more than 40 times. They know what the result will be. They live in the real world, too. They knew this action would lead to a shutdown, and it did.
Well, I think that when you look at legislation, when you say the president wants 100% of Obamacare or he will shut down the government, that's exactly what's happened. If he doesn't get 100% of his way or the highway, then they won't do any spending bills that don't include everything that he wants. That's him unwilling to negotiate. That's him being unwilling to compromise.
But why is it even a matter of a negotiation when it's passed both houses of Congress, it's been signed by the president, it's been challenged in the Supreme Court, it's been upheld by the Supreme Court? It was a central issue in the 2012 election campaign, and the president won re-election. Why is that a legitimate point of negotiation right now?
Well, because it's Congress's job to oversee spending. The power of the purse resides with Congress, and they fund programs every year. So it's not their obligation, once something is law, to never change it. For example, in 1983, we changed Social Security. It had been around 50 years, and the age of eligibility was 65. We changed it to 67 because Social Security was going bankrupt. We face some of those same problems again, and it isn't that it's set in stone that we'll never revisit Medicare or Social Security or Obamacare, for that matter. So I think it's a silly argument for Democrats to say, oh, the law's been passed, we can't ever change it.
Well, of course, you have to propose something that can get through the House, the Senate, and be signed by the president. Back in the 80s, they didn't shut down the government to make that happen, did they?
Well, how do you know what will pass until you propose something and vote on it? So we've proposed several compromises. Our initial position, and still our position, is we think Obamacare is a bad idea and will hurt the people it was intended to help. But when that didn't pass, when the Democrats didn't accept that, we said, well, what about a one-year delay? We've been offering compromise after compromise, but you hear from the president and his men and his women, no negotiation, his way or the highway. They're the ones who are unwilling to compromise on any facet of Obamacare, and I think that intransigence has led to the shutdown of the government.
You talk about compromise a lot with regard to Obamacare. I'm just curious, what part of Obamacare do you like and want to keep? Which half of it?
You know, I don't really like any of Obamacare, but I realize I'm not going to get my way. But we do control a third of the government. People did elect us to fight. You know, 61% of the people in Kentucky voted for Romney. 70% of people in Kentucky don't like Obamacare. So the thing is I'm supposed to go and fight to make bills either less bad or make them better if possible. So I think it is my job to stand up and provide oversight for legislation. It's precisely what Congress is supposed to be doing. This is Congress's job.
Yeah, like him or not, agree or not, you have to admit that Rand Paul is doing his job. He was elected to put forward this conservative position and shut down this horrible bill that nobody in Kentucky, well, maybe 30% of the people in Kentucky actually want. But the interesting thing to me is not how that woman got owned by Rand Paul, because he's speaking the truth. What's interesting to me is, I don't know, I haven't read the bill where the Senate passed that defined what a journalist is, but if this woman qualifies, I'm assuming that they defined a journalist as not somebody who reports the news or asks the politicians the tough questions about policy, but apparently you have to be a snarky, condescending bitch that twists it for the Democrat Party. I guess that's the new definition of journalism, because that's what she did. And I think that's – look, the reason we started off with that clip, not only because we like to hear from Rand Paul because he's a liberty champ, okay, but just notice the way she asked the questions. Like, Chris, she says, which half of Obamacare do you want to keep? What kind of question is that? I mean, you know, and the constantly cutting him off. This is a senator. This is a senator. She should have a little bit more respect. I'm not saying that they're gods or anything, but let's be clear about something. These people are elected to a position that only 100 people hold at a time to represent, well, despite the 17th Amendment, to represent the states, which are the creators of the federal government. So, you know, we should have a little respect until, of course, they act like Jihad Jane McComed, and then it's hard to respect them because that dude's just fucking nuts. But what did you think of the way she was asking them those questions, Chris?
I was I had to put myself on mute, if that's a good way to explain what I thought of her questions. You know, the other thing, too, and Rand was busy defending himself, but and he looked a little bit tired. But one of the things, too, is that none of these liberal commentators, reporters, journalists, whatever the hell you want to call them, ever bring up the fact that Obama has illegally stopped several aspects of the Obamacare bill. And he is not legally able to do that. So which part of the bill didn't he like? And that never gets talked about, Rex. None of the facts get talked about because their goal is to destroy Republicans. Democrats don't like this bill either. Everybody's asking for a waiver or
waiver.
To be put off for a year. Nobody likes the damn bill. Doesn't anybody get this? You know, the internet is full of people that have gone on and said, oh, my God, I can't afford this, and now are already being set up to be fined or have their houses put on a lien because they opted out. I mean, it's mind-boggling. The whole system, I don't know if you read that one tech article where somebody broke it down, all the glitches in the system, and they said it is tied to so many different databases, which are all government databases, which tells you why they're faulty to begin with. And so what happens is it's tied to so many things. This thing is destined to fail. It's destined to have glitches, and it's destined to be a nightmare with identity theft. And they're out there, and she's out there. Yeah, and she's out there arguing like, you know, this is all the Republicans and you guys just don't like Obama. You know, that same old bull crap argument I've been hearing for 4 years. Every time they challenge something that's either unconstitutional or we can't afford it or it was a lie or they backtrack, because every one of these people who are screaming, it's absolutely insane some days.
Well, Chris, I mean, it's insane because the simple fact is that, you know, there are some committed lefties who want this thing to happen, and I don't think that they want it to happen because they actually like these exchanges. They want it to happen because they know that this thing is designed to fail to bring about their, you know, 60-year dream of a single-payer system. That's the intent here. But for the most part, most, you know, thinking people have realized, holy crap, this thing was sold as a, you know, bill of goods that is, you know, not possible. And it's a disaster, and we got to get rid of it. However, just like with the red line on the war in Syria that dummy opened his mouth and did, you know, and then they all had to, like, backpedal and, like, cover up to save his face because he screwed up. It's the same thing here. This is his, quote, signature piece of legislation. So whether it sucks or not, whether it destroys jobs, whether it even attacks the very people it's intended to help, no matter what, we have to save it because it's the only way we can make Obama look good. Well, you know.
Yeah.
You like the guy, you play golf with him, you slept with him at one point in your life. I don't know. Whatever reason you like him is no reason to destroy this country. He screwed up. It's screwed up. Let it go. And the fact is, it's not really that much of a problem because he's waived 80% of it. We're just saying, you know, hey, why don't you just delay the rest until either, A, you can get it fixed, or, B, we can just get rid of it.
Well, here's something. Just to give you an idea how bad this is, things that you pick up along the journey of research, the news, the AP and the rest of them are trying to get away from Obamacare and go back to calling it the Affordable Care Act, because it's so damn negative that it's being reflected on in his name. And here's what's stupid about that. He's the one that said, wow, Obamacare, I kind of like that. Well, now they're trying to get rid of the word Obamacare because it's a frickin' nightmare. It's been a four-year nightmare or three-plus-year nightmare since it got approved.
Oh, yeah.
And it's cost our country a fortune during an economic recession when I mean, never in my life. I mean, and this is, you know, this is another conversation for a second half. But when you look at all, if you've ever studied all the recessions in this modern era, and you look at the reactions that the government did or the Fed did or whatever the case may be, you don't crush the economy with government entitlement programs that don't work in a recession.
Unless your intention,
you know, usually,
unless your intention is to crush the economy.
Yeah, and maybe that's the bottom line. I know that's the conspiracy concept is they just want to destroy it so we can, you know, rebuild this, you know, this new world order kind of thing and have all one world under socialism. I don't know. I don't know how they expect to pay.
Well, look, Chris, whether it's a new world order or not, the simple fact is that the socialists and communists in this country do want to destroy this economy because it is a, you know, capitalist, even though it's not really capitalist, it's quasi-capitalist.
When was it a capitalist economy?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on how we define capitalism. You know, I mean, let's keep in mind two things, and people really get confused by words, and that's by design, okay? Part of the modern, postmodern deconstructionist movement is to degrade words so that they become meaningless so that you can't communicate. This is why, you know, you call someone a conservative and you don't, you know, well, what do you mean by conservative? Do you mean I'm a Republican? Do you mean that I want to take the world back to the 1950s? Or do you mean I'm trying to conserve the timeless principles enshrined in classical liberal documents, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution? You have to define these terms. It takes like a paragraph to define one word every time you want to communicate with somebody. It's ridiculous. But keep in mind that the term capitalism is a pejorative word coined by Karl Marx. He's the one that called it capitalism. The simple fact is all economic systems are capitalist in that they distribute capital. So the question isn't, is it a capitalist economy? The question is, what's the method of distribution? Is it a communist method of distribution, in which case there is no private property and the state distributes capital? Is it socialist, in which case it's just communist light? Is it fascist, where private corporations that use the government for their benefit distribute the capital? Is it state capitalism, which is another form of fascism or corporatism, which is basically what we have? It's also what the Chinese have. Or is it free market capitalism, where the individual actors within the economy engaged in mutually beneficial voluntary exchange are the ones who decide how the capital is distributed? That's the key. One of those is not like the others, because one of those is maximum freedom. You as the individual, although not completely autonomous because we are living in society and we do have government, so you ANCAPs and anarchists can, you know, freak out over my statement there, but it is the lowest level of authority. It is the highest level of maximum freedom whereby the individual makes their ultimate economic decisions and engages voluntarily with others in the same manner so that both parties or multiple parties in the transaction each benefit and walk away feeling pretty good about the transaction. That's a free market capitalist economy. That's what built this country. And if you're on the other side of the equation, whether socialist, communist, corporatist, or whatever the hell you want to be, then your intent is to bring down that free market so that you can command it. And any kind of mixed or command economy is doomed to failure. As soon as the sooner you people realize that all your utopian dreams of command and mixed economies always end up on the ash heap of history, the sooner we can get beyond this. And that's what this fight is about, Chris. This fight is about whether we're going to be a constitutional republic with liberty and a free market capitalist economy, which all the ills you want to blame on the free market about what's going on right now, you cannot do. Because we have so little free market in this country, all of the ills can be blamed on exactly the direction that you want to take it in, which is bigger government. That's what this Obamacare thing is about. Or, by its, you know, official name, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I mean, Orwell would have had a field day with that one, because it doesn't protect any patients, and it's not fucking affordable. But
it's
the media spin machine, Yeah, it's not free. Why do you need to spend $1 billion marketing free health care to people that are going to get fined if they don't buy your free health care? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Oh, my God.
But here's the thing, Chris. The media spin machine, the spin down, okay, it's dumbing down the message and spinning it. It's spinning so hard to create this illusion that somehow this small, unpopular faction within the Republican Party, the Tea Party anarchists, are holding the government hostage. Let's be clear about a couple of things. The so-called Tea Party Liberty Republicans, and I say Tea Party Liberty because someone like Ted Cruz came up in the Tea Party, someone like Rand Paul even came up in the Tea Party, but someone like Justin Amash came up in the Liberty Movement, so it's kind of a mixed bag, but they're basically on the same page. The constitutionalists, the Tea Party Liberty wing of the Republican Party, is a minority in the majority of one chamber of one of the three branches of government. And when it's polled, it's showing you that, you know, Tea Party has lost its favor amongst the people. Well, what do you mean by Tea Party? And who are you polling? First of all, most people I know who are Tea Party-minded don't belong to a Tea Party. They've never been to a Tea Party meeting. Maybe they went to a protest. Maybe they signed a Tea Party petition. But they've never joined a Tea Party. So, you know who are these people? Well, it's most of America. Most of America is conservative slash libertarian. Most of them actually agree with the principles of the Tea Party. And most of them, by the way, when you've called them up to poll them or whatever, ignore you because they have lives, they have jobs, they have businesses, they have families. So they don't have time to answer stupid petitions. The people who answer stupid petitions are kids that are smoking pot in their parents' basement while they're, quote, sitting on their student loans and their parents' health insurance. Or, you know, liberals who, for the most part, even if they have jobs, don't actually work at them, so they have time to answer these petitions. So it's very skewed. But most of the country is getting more conservative and more libertarian, which is exactly what this Tea Party faction is standing up for. But, however, to call them hostage takers is to basically say that the Founding Fathers were so stupid as to give all of the appropriations power to the House, and that the House is able now to put the position on the table that they want to negotiate. And, in fact, the House has. The House has put forward clean CR after clean CR after clean CR, which have all been tabled on Harry Reid's desk. Okay? And, furthermore, they have actually moved towards the White House Democrat Reid position by going from eliminating and repealing Obamacare to defunding it and now merely asking for a one-year delay. Where have Harry Reid and Obama moved? Nowhere. All they say is we won't negotiate. Well, guess what? That's why the government shut down. And it'll remain shut down until those two weasels actually come to the table to negotiate. And that's what this is about, which is why it's the Republicans' victory and America's victory for the Republicans to lose. Call your congressman. Call your senator. Call Mitch McConnell. Okay, and the switchboard is 202-224-3121. And if you'd like to give little Mitch McConnell a call directly himself, I think I got his number handy somewhere. Mitch McConnell, 202-224-2541, and get them to remain firm and resolute. Now, here's a little clip from CNN. It's 2.5 minutes, Chris, and it's interesting. Listen to how they kind of paint this thing as the, you know, Tea Party hostage-taking shutdown, because it's important for people to understand. Even if you don't trust the media, whether it's CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, I don't care, the messages are so prevalent and they're repeated because most people in this country have given up the idea of critical thinking. All they do is repeat information they've heard without knowing what it means. It's repeated so much that subconsciously it's actually resonating in your brain whether you know it or not. You have to consciously fight against it. But just listen to the way that they tee this up.
This is really incredible, because if you go back to 95 and 96 and the last government shutdown, which knocked a half a point off of GDP in the United States, at least Gingrich was in charge of his caucus. Now, it appears that Heritage Action and Ted Cruz and the Koch brothers are running the Republican House caucus. And it is amazing. The weakness, I think, that the leadership has shown in not staring these guys down.
It's amazing to me how terrified you are of a guy that ran for the Senate on saying he was going to do actually what he said he was going to do. And here's the thing people don't understand about Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz did not come to Washington, D.C. to make friends with John McCain and Lindsey Graham or with John Boehner. He went there with the people. He said, this is how I'm going to get elected. This is what I'm going to do. But let me say this real quick. This is important. John McCain and Ted Cruz are two totally different people. And John McCain says, I don't like you because you're getting too much press. I don't like you because you're being too effective.
Beyond the personality.
That's what it boils down to.
Let me step beyond the personalities. Personalities will come and go. What's missing in the Republican Party right now is someone who's a credible national figure, who's not just a columnist or a pundit like some of us, who can actually step forward and provide a different vision of conservatism than the one that Ted Cruz believes in. There is room in the Republican Party for a vision of conservatism that says, yeah, we don't want to fix health care in this big, bloated, bureaucratic way if the Democrats want to do it. But we do think that we can figure out ways to deal with the problem of the uninsured. We think we can deal with the problem of businesses and cost containment, but we can do it in a better, more constructive way. And on issue after issue, on food stamps, there is a vision, the Republican Party, that says we're not going to throw the program out and gut it, but we can reform it and make it better. That reform vision is missing on the national stage, and that ought to be the counter to Cruz. Yeah, if it's Obama against Cruz, of course it's easy for Republicans to line up.
I think there's a lot missing on the national stage for Republicans, and I'm not afraid of Ted Cruz. I don't find Ted Cruz scary. I don't find Ted Cruz scary. What I find scary is the notion that he is in charge of the House of Representatives. Of course, if he became speaker, he might find that it's not a very pleasant job. But what's scary isn't the presence of Cruz. What's scary is the absence of Boehner, the absence of strong Republican leadership who can call the bluff of this fairly small faction of House Republicans
and yet they're all voting unanimously.
Yeah, it's not small.
What a joke.
Why are you afraid of Ted Cruz? Let's see, because Ted Cruz is actually effective. That's just awesome. I also like the way he started that off, but at least Gingrich controlled his caucus. Well, to a degree, and during the contract with America and the shutdowns he did, but then, quote, his caucus, like Boehner and Graham and Ricky Santorum, they turned on him because he was too effective at moving the ball back towards the right. Was he conservative enough? I don't know. You be the judge of that. It depends on where you fall in the spectrum, conservative, libertarian, and such. But what you cannot deny is that Gingrich forced a popular, intelligent, powerful, liberal Democrat president to the right, and things got better until the rhinos ousted him. And the interesting thing is, Chris, I heard another clip where they were, I don't know if it was in the same show or a different show, where they were basically talking about how they were very excited. They were actually giddy, like a schoolgirl, that there are 25 Senate Republicans that are have privately expressed the fact that they're going to try to come up with some solution for the Ted Cruz problem, you know. And then one of the guys on the panel said, "Well, you know, you heard those private messages a week ago. How come none of them said it publicly? Is it A, because they can't do it, or it's not working, or is it that Ted Cruz is too powerful?" Or have they decided that if they came out publicly, it would piss off their electorate too much and they would get all the phone calls and Twitters and emails? Or is it all of the above? You know, but that's what's going on here. They're trying to paint you, because let's be clear about something. When they attack Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul and Tea Party conservatives and Liberty conservatives, who they are really attacking is the very people that that faction represents, which
there you
is
go.
You. If you love the Constitution, it's you if you want liberty. It's you if you take personal responsibility for everything you possibly can in your life and only delegate those very things that you cannot do alone to the power of government. That's who they're attacking. That's what this liberal elite media is attacking. So when you hear them beating up on Cruz, don't get confused by his personality. Maybe you like his personality. Maybe you think he's a bully. Maybe you like Rand Paul. Maybe you think he's too hokey. Okay, maybe you like Justin Amash, but you think he's too young to, you know, be anything. Whatever. I don't really care what your personal thoughts about them are. But the simple fact is when they get attacked, don't think it's someone attacking them. They are attacking you by attacking them. So defend them and stand up for them and call them and thank them for doing the job they're doing and call those who oppose them and tell them that they had better stand down and get with the program or move on over to the other fucking party. Sorry. Joker.
Bingo. No, that's I totally agree. I mean, we're not talking about Keystone Pipeline here, folks. We're talking about the fundamental change that this country may never, never recover from. And I'm being nice about it when I say probably will never, never. Okay, this is bad. It's been bad since it was passed. It was not, I don't know how many people even remember the shenanigans that went on in the House and Senate to get the Obamacare bill passed. But that was a whole, you know, you need to go back and study that. We the people did not vote for this, and they didn't win with 100% in the House and Senate. They won by very slim margins, and the Senate, they pulled some shenanigan in the Senate to get it pushed through before Scott Brown showed up in his new post. You know, there's a lot of history there, and they have fought, and they have fought, and they have fought. Now here, and I'm going to say this again, even though I said it earlier, Obama has delayed, illegally delayed, President Obama has illegally delayed multiple aspects of this bill because it was not ready for prime time, or, you know, it was for his buddies or corporate America. I mean, that's the last thing he did was the corporate America thing. Corporations don't have to follow the law for a year. Number one, a president cannot pick and choose portions of legislation, you know, to get like the border, right, to run or not run. You can't do that, number one. Number two, if it's so damn good, why is he doing it? So really, and we said this way back when we first started this conversation on air about this thing, the Republicans are doing him a favor because this thing is all, it's crashing as we speak. As the liberals are lying, you know, and bullying Republicans and trying to make the Tea Party and Rand and Ted and these guys look like villains. And, you know, this whole game, they do the same. It's the same dialogue. All you do is you pull out Obamacare, you put in the Second Amendment. It's the same thing they did back then. You pull out Second Amendment, you put in the next thing.
It's the Alinsky playbook.
Yeah.
It's the Alinsky playbook. That's what they're running.
They don't even have to think. They're programmed. They just replace the word and replace a few names of people they want to attack, depending on, you know, which Republican is pushing the bill, you know.
Yeah.
They have totally spun this thing out of control. And the bottom line is, you look across the world, you look at our economy over the last 5-6 years, and you look at the mess. This thing is projected already. It's 3 or 4 times more expensive than they thought it was going to be.
Yeah, $2.2 trillion.
You know, things are falling apart. Things aren't working. You got states that refuse to be on the exchanges. You know, I mean, it's just, it is a mess. And they're still pushing it forward. There's only one thing they want from this, because they don't care if it succeeds or doesn't succeed, because they already got their next set of how to blame the Republicans for that. Even if Republicans voted for this thing and put it in and then it crashed, it would be another excuse that, well, they didn't give us enough money, or, you know, whatever. It would always be another excuse. It doesn't matter. There's one thing they want: 2014. Never forget that. 2014
that's true
is coming
for
up, and they.
Yep.
Go ahead.
It's true. No, I was going to say that's true for all of them. But, you know, the question is, you know, wanting to win in 2014 isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's what are you trying to win? And I agree with you. What they're trying to win is regain the House and keep the White House and keep the Senate and basically implement the massive socialist agenda as quickly as possible, because they know that their time is short.
Yeah. It's scary.
You know, it's just that simple. Listen, we've actually spent an hour on
this.
We haven't even gotten into the Rhino attack, and we've still got the debt ceiling to talk about. And actually, I got a couple of long clips for the debt ceiling because it can be complex, but we'll unpack it. This is the last of our upfront long clips. It's 5 minutes with that I pulled from Ted Cruz on CNN this morning with Candy, which is just an odd name for that woman because I think it's a stripper name. But that's besides the point. Here's Ted.
Now we need to deal with the fact that a significant percentage of the government is shut down because Harry Reid and President Obama have refused to negotiate. And you're seeing House Republicans over and over again passing reasonable bills to open vital government services, and President Obama and the Democrats refusing to negotiate. We ought to focus on that first, because that's the immediate challenge.
Well, I grant you that both sides see the other side as at fault here. But that's about blame. I think what the American people want to know is, where does this end? You talked last night, you were at a Virginia Republican event in Richmond, and said Republicans will win this, and by that I believe you meant what you wanted in exchange for a spending bill. What does win this mean to you? What does it have to look like for a Republican victory?
Well, let me be clear. I didn't say Republicans will win this. Listen, I think career politicians in both parties have been part of the problem. What I said is the American people are going to win, and that's something
very different.
Well,
so what
does
that win look like? What does the American people win look like to you?
Look, what the American people want is they want our government funded, and they want to stop the harms from Obamacare. Obamacare is hurting millions of people. It's killing their jobs. It's forcing them into part-time work. It's driving up health insurance premiums. And it's causing millions of Americans to lose or risk losing their health insurance. That's a win for the American people, is actually responding to the real harms that are coming from Obamacare.
So let me show you some polling that was done recently. And the question encompasses both those things you just talked about. And that is, do you believe, the question is, that in order to change Obamacare, defund it, the government should shut down, if that's the price for getting it done? And the CBS poll basically showed 72% totally disapprove of that tactic. So if we're listening to what the American people want, they don't want a government shutdown simply because there are differences over the health care law.
But Candy, as you phrased that question, I'm in that 72%. I don't want the government to shut down. I've said that throughout. And the reason the government has shut down, you know, you mentioned, in fact, earlier you guys ran a graphic on the screen, both sides refused to negotiate. And look, I understand the natural reaction. You see an impasse, and the sort of natural reaction is, well, both sides are to blame. But I don't think the facts support that, because if you look, the House Republicans repeatedly have been compromising, have been passing one bill after another, first of all, on Obamacare itself, and then secondly, working to restart vital government functions. And the Senate Democrats, over and over again, and President Obama has said they won't negotiate, they won't talk, they have not moved one inch. And when you've got one side that's compromising, the other side that isn't, I don't think it's an accurate or fair description to say that neither side's negotiating.
But it is accurate to say, is it not, that absent the Republicans attaching things to do with the President's Health Care Act, a clean CR would have gone through? That's accurate, correct?
Look, that's actually not accurate. So, for example, you played the President saying, let's have a vote, let's stop the farce. I agree with President Obama. There are 8 bills that the House has passed that are piled up on Harry Reid's desk, and Harry Reid will not let the Senate vote. So, for example, Jack Lew, Candy, said we need to fund our veterans and disability payments. I agree. The House has passed a bill to fund our veterans. Every Senate Republican believes we should fund our veterans. Regardless of what happens in the shutdown, our veterans shouldn't pay the price. And right now, Harry Reid and the Senate Democrats are refusing to have a vote, and they're blocking it. The only reason the VA is not adequately funded right now is because Harry Reid and the Democrats are blocking it. That's not reasonable.
How about a cooling-off period? There's this idea being floated, CNN is reporting, kind of a cooling-off period, that you pass a clean spending bill for 6 weeks, and on it you also increase the debt ceiling for 6 weeks. And in that 6 weeks, you negotiate on how to fund the government for the rest of the fiscal year, and you negotiate the debt ceiling.
Candy,
that would accomplish, would it not, what you want, which is the president at the table?
Look what you just asked. You said, how about the agreement be, give the Democrats 100% of what they want with no changes whatsoever. They're not talking now, but if you give them everything you want, then they'll talk. No, they won't. Look, we saw this week President Obama, after months of refusing to talk to Congress, finally invited congressional leaders over, sat down and said, hi, I invited you here to say I will not negotiate. Their view is not reasonable. It is Republicans in Congress who are passing bills to reopen the parks, to reopen the memorials, to fund cancer research, to fund our veterans, and it is the Democrats who are refusing to have a vote. I mean, Candy, why won't Harry Reid let the Senate vote on the 8 bills the House has passed to fund vital parts of the government?
I think he would say because he thinks he's being blackmailed, but I want to continue this conversation. We'll be back. We've got to take a quick break. We want to talk about a...
They keep saying clean CR. Well, you know, a clean CR is a CR that says this department of government is going to be funded by X. That's a clean CR. The giant CR with every department in one bill and Obamacare is not clean.
It's socialism.
That's a mess.
Yeah,
that's a mess. These are clean CRs. There's 8 of them on Harry Reid's desk. Make Harry Reid vote. Call up Harry Reid and tell him,
Have the Senate vote on DCRs and let the Democrats shoot down funding for Veterans Administration. Have them shoot down funding NIH cancer research, which, you know, ostensibly I kind of disagree with. I don't know why we have to have government hospitals doing research when we, you know, most of the medical advancements and research is done by private institutions and private companies. But that's besides the point. You know, the idea is that this is the government you got, you fund it, that's fine, and then you roll it back. But don't add $2.2 trillion of a debacle of a health care bill that doesn't work, that is already delayed and defunded illegally by the president himself, simply to put the burden on individuals that you refuse to put on corporations and congressmen and the executive department and the IRS, which will be enforcing the damn taxes and fines. That's the insanity of it. Now, I would say that, that out of most of the media jerk-offs, she did a far more fair job, although not exactly fair, than the others. And she at least let Ted Cruz get his points out. And he did a great job of explaining the position. The fact is that it is the right position because appropriations is the proper purview of the House. And, in fact, Speaker Newt Gingrich, who knows a thing or two about negotiating and government shutdowns, wrote this back in January when he talked about the legislative agenda the Republicans should adopt, which, of course, John Boehner and Mitch McConnell didn't adopt any of it until they were forced to, maybe about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. But he says that there are five tools that the House has by which to force a president to negotiate, and those tools are appropriations, oversight, legislation, communication, and negotiations. And negotiation is the weakest of those tools if you try to lead with it, which is what Boehner and McConnell try to lead with. They try to lead with getting along with bipartisan negotiations. That's the weakest tool. The most powerful tool is appropriations, which is what Ted Cruz is leading with. And Newt says the most powerful tool is appropriations. This power goes all the way back to Runnymede and the signing of the Magna Carta. If the people's representatives don't appropriate the money, the president can't spend it. House Republicans should be prepared to suspend all appropriations except national security and public safety. They should selectively zero out the least popular of the president's initiatives and agencies. He can attack the House all he wants, but he can't spend money without its approval. The conservative movement would be galvanized by such a display of firmness. That was Newt writing back in January. They didn't listen to him. Ted Cruz led the initiative on this with Mike Lee and Rand Paul in support and some of the conservatives in the House like Amash and Gohmert and all those guys. And look at what's happening. People are galvanized by this very thing. And the longer this goes on, even though ideally it wouldn't go on too long, the more conservatives are vindicated in their position and the more the lies of the left are exposed, especially with Obamacare falling down around their ears.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. And the thing is, too, is nobody's going to listen to me in terms of Ted and Rand. And those guys are in the hot seat. They're being attacked. They've got, you know, all 1,600 or 1,800 different media machines coming down on them. Plus, you know, Fox is, you know, there's only a few people on Fox that, you know, take a conservative position on anything. The rest of them are just as bad as they are. You know, I mean, listening to Candy. She sounded just like some of these Fox people. I mean, they're like, well, why can't you do this? Or why did you guys do that? And, you know, it's the same old crap. But what these guys need to do is rise above this and start responding with hard, cold facts of what the sign-up process is looking like. You know what I mean? That was one of the powerful things when Ted did his filibuster and reading letters, you know, Obamacare is doing this to me and that to me and this to me and my business and I can't hire and I can't, you know, all these things. Well, we have real live case study now of whether it's the technology or the glitches or people going in. I was paying $147 a month. Now I'm at $600 with $13,000 deductible and I'm broke. You know, I can't afford it.
Yeah.
I opted out. That night I got an email saying that, you know, I have a $4,000 fine that I have to pay. I mean, those stories are so powerful. They're inarguable because they're facts. They're real-life stories. And these guys need to get above this argument that, you know, responding to the attacks, because the attacks are canned. And all these people are as hitmen,
you know, to get this stuff out there, and they need to be able to be quicker at responding on this stuff. I mean, I know that we're doing everything we can to get information out there and educate people, but they're the ones that are under the attack. They need to turn the attack, and they can all do it if they have enough time in a interview to do it. But the problem is the interviewers come at them so fast, they need to learn to respond quicker and turn it around quicker. Go ahead.
Well, and I think that I think Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and even Mike Lee, who I thought would have trouble with this, is actually showing that they can really do it. But the thing is that the only reason that they're going to get these longer interviews,
though.
I mean, Ted Cruz was on with Candy for like 18 minutes today. The only reason they're getting this much airtime is because of the interest in this, because of the grassroots. So it's very important that you do your part. Get this show out there. We're breaking this down and putting it together for you. If someone just listens to this show 2.5 hours or however long we run today, because we've only got 50 minutes of airtime left, and we still got a lot to cover, we're putting it together in a way that you won't get on Fox News, on CNN, or even, you know, the right-wing news like Breitbart and Daily Caller and stuff like that. We're putting it together so that you can just get it encapsulated. But the important thing to remember, and you mentioned something, you said, you know, that Candy sounded like some of the interviews on friendly, fair, and balanced Fox News sound like Candy, who's on Communist News Network. It's because Fox News is not your friend, conservatives, and most, quote, Republican voters who are themselves conservative still don't know that. They're still listening to Roe. They're still listening to Bill O'Reilly. They're still listening to that little girl, Shep Smith. Shep, eat a hamburger, for God's sake. You got to get them off the Fox News. I'm not saying don't watch Fox News. Don't watch CNN. Watch all of them.
Well,
but just realize that but none of them are really your friend. None of them are really telling you the truth. And the worst part of it is that they always find a way to bring up and play a clip or interview after they – you know, have Ted or Rand or a real conservative on, they'll bring on a pro-conservative. Yeah, after you leave, they'll bring on Jihad Jane Muhammad or Lindsey Graham or this guy. And this guy drives me nuts. This is just a minute, but it's the last clip in this segment, and then hopefully we'll get to the other three things we wanted to get to. Here's Peter King, who may be the only one with as much of a hard-on for war as Jihad Jane Muhammad from Arizona, just talking about Ted Cruz, and listen to the way he does it. And this is allegedly a colleague in his own party. Come on, Blog Talk Radio. Play the clip. We're having some technical difficulties because Blog Talk Radio is a shoestring technology, and we can't afford to hire better technology, so please like our show on Facebook make sure you share it.
What do you do to bring the Republican Party together? Because right now you know that all the polls are blaming Republicans for this shutdown, and it looks as if it's just all about the infighting instead of what many believe we should be talking about today, which is Obamacare not working.
No, the fact is, that's right, and that's Ted Cruz's fault. Ted Cruz led us down this path. This was a disaster from the start. I could have predicted this, and this is what the leadership predicted 3 weeks ago when they said they would never pursue defunding because it was going to work against us and we'd be blamed. But Ted Cruz insisted that his people follow him, and we did it, and that's why we're in this position. It's his fault, and he wants us to get him out of it. Listen, I'm saying the president should negotiate, but I'm saying this was caused by Ted Cruz and his acolytes in the House of Representatives. They led us down this dead-end street, and that's why Wall Street Journal, Karl Rove, Tom Coburn, all solid conservatives, said this was a terrible policy to begin with. We had Republican senators say it was the dopiest idea they ever heard of. Ted Cruz is to blame, and those in the House who stand with him have brought about this train wreck. It's up to us to try to get it out, and it's up to the president to step in and stop standing on the side.
I mean,
I hope,
seriously,
I hope people realize that you could get rid of that guy in 2014.
I mean, first of all, he cites conservatives like Karl Rove. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And he's actually publicly attacking Ted Cruz. Now, you want to have differences with him behind closed doors? You know, you're right. But, you know, attacking him publicly at a time like this when there's a standoff is just irresponsible. And in fact, basically, he's saying that he's siding with Obama publicly against Ted Cruz. If this isn't more of an exposure of these rhino squizzes, I don't know what it is. And the only way to respond to a guy like Peter King is, like you said, 2014, New York, please, get rid of this guy. He's got to go. He's absolutely atrocious, and it's up to you to dispatch him. But that's the kind of stuff that is going on.
The squishes are feigning to be united right now and feigning to be against Obamacare when they're waiting for the opportunity. Yeah, exactly. That's the only response.
Shut up, boo!
Like Peter King. Exactly. Thank you, Mr. T. But yeah, that the longer this goes on, the more that they get exposed for the rhino squishes that they are, and it's up to you to keep exposing them because they're really stupid, and they're going to fall. But you have to put pressure on them. So do it. Your comments, Chris.
Yeah.
You trademark is stupidity.
I'm just thinking about – it's all right, man. I'm just thinking about the last 12 years of this country and what has been passed, the laws, the debt ceilings under Bush, under Obama, the wars, the No Child Left Behind, the expansion of government, you know, federal government in our education system. I don't, you know, just pick anything. The NSA, you know, Patriot Act all the way up until what we have today with the NSA. I don't know how many more facts, and I'm not talking about the conspiracy stuff. I'm talking about facts. You know, what Snowden busted loose with the NSA. There's stuff coming out every day on this, and yet it doesn't even get talked about. You know, Obamacare, there's things that are coming out every day of the nightmare this thing is, and it doesn't even get talked about. Yeah, it does on social media and you know, certain groups and things like that are what we're trying to cover. But, you know, the national dialogue in this country sucks. You know, I mean, we're getting ready to, we're arguing. We have guys like the clip you have of Harry Reid talking about, you know, beating up on Bush and the Republicans for raising the debt limit because it got us into these untenable wars, you know, and then they're turn around and they're talking about, well, you know, we should be talking about the debt ceiling. You got a president that, you know, beat up on Bush, called him unpatriotic, you know, talked about it being, you know, just, it was going to destroy our country. Now he's in there saying, well, raising the debt isn't really raising the debt. I mean, are you serious? And people don't get that. See, nobody's going to hold these people accountable in mainstream media because these psychos want socialism. They are so enamored with some ideology that's always proven to fail across the land. But they're so enamored with it, it's just mind-boggling to me. There's nobody willing to have real discussions on real issues because they're going to raise the damn debt ceiling again. And, you know, and I love what Peter Schiff said. He said, the only reason you raise the debt ceiling is not to show the world that we're accountable and we pay our bills. You raise the debt ceiling because we're not accountable and we don't pay our bills and we don't fix our damn government. That's why you raise the debt ceiling. And yet it takes one guy like that to say it and you just go, oh, my God, that's so true. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like you're upside down on your mortgage, right? You're bringing in $47,000 of annual income. You're spending $58,000, and so you go to your credit card company and you say, hey, you know what? I've charged up $20,000 on my credit card. It has a $21,000 limit. You guys willing to front me another $12,000 because I'm responsible? They're going to look at you and go, no, you're not responsible.
You're
spending more than you take in, and you want to borrow more. No, but that's what we're saying. We're spending 50% more than we take in as a country. And so we have to borrow more, not to include the fact that we're already technically borrowing $85 billion a month thanks to Ben Bernanke's money printing machine. You know, so you want to raise the debt limit to borrow more. And you know, I want to get into the debt limit, but real quick, I wanted to finish up talking about these attacks because it's not just Peter King. It's also the Senate. The Senate is attacking, these, what were they, 25 that voted no on cloture and two that basically, abstained from voting, which is a no vote. These guys don't want this controversy. They want it to go away. They don't want to stand for anything. They want to go along to get along. And, in fact, they have actually not only behind closed doors attacked Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, but then they've, you know, leaked it out in the public. And that is, at a time when you're in a factional standoff like this, that's not the kind of stuff that you do. It weakens your side's position, even if you don't happen to like the tactic. You should keep your mouth shut in public. and just do it behind closed doors. But it is pretty unconscionable that they're doing this. And the simple fact is that these guys are taking arrows and slings for you. They're behind enemy lines. You need to thank them and stand with them. And so you need to call Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and thank them.
Well, first of all, we have to remember that right at first a lot of people were saying it was not even possible to come up with legislation that could keep everything else in government funded while defunding Obamacare. They said it was not physically, legally possible. Then they said it was just highly improbable. And more they're seeing that this movement is unstoppable. It's unstoppable because the American people are getting behind it. And as to the personal nature of the attacks, you know, unfortunately that's become the nature of Washington. We see it within both political parties. We see it among people who call themselves conservatives or liberals. It generally tends to be from people who are part of the Washington, D.C. establishment, whether they're in office or in media or in their practicing in the art of political punditry. But they tend to attack personally when somebody comes along and raises an idea that they haven't thought of. But over time, many of them tend to come around, and those who don't discredit themselves when they discredit the American people.
Now, there was allegedly a Republican Senate conference meeting early this week where your colleague Ted Cruz took a lot of slings and arrows. Were you there, Senator Lee?
Yes, I was there. And, you know, normally I don't comment at all on closed-door meetings among Republican senators. That's a pretty strict rule we follow. One exception I'll make is in circumstances like this one, where the contents of the meeting were leaked deliberately by several of my colleagues and leaked in a very one-sided way. So I'm happy to tell you about it here.
Please do.
Yeah, there was an all-out attack against Ted Cruz and me. It was unflattering. It was unfair. It was demeaning. It was demeaning to Senator Cruz and to me, but more than anything, it was demeaning to those who engaged in the attacks.
How many senators rose to speak against you guys?
Quite a few, enough that I lost count. And, you know, I have to ask the question, you know, why were those who leaked this and leaked it in a very unflattering, unfavorable way, why were they not willing to attach their names to those quotes? You know, Ted Cruz and I spoke after the meeting, and we both concluded we would both be fine with the American people seeing and hearing exactly what we said in that meeting. But we're pretty sure that most of our colleagues would be very uncomfortable and downright embarrassed if their constituents saw the way they were behaving.
Did anyone rise to your defense?
Sort of.
Sort of?
Not really. He and I, of course, rose to each other's defense. But there were a couple who said some things that were somewhat conciliatory. There were a lot of people who were participating directly in the attacks, adding fuel to the fire. There were a lot of others who were staring at their shoes. But look, I want to keep the main focus here on Obamacare. We don't need these distractions within the party. What we need is to maintain unity within the party. All Republicans in the Senate and the House, to my knowledge, do, in fact, oppose Obamacare.
Okay.
Pretty amazing,
oust,
right?
Oust all Bush-era rhinos in 2014. Go ahead.
No, you go. Run with it. That was pretty amazing, wasn't it?
Well, I've been saying this for how long have we known each other? A year and a half? 2 years? I don't freaking remember. It feels like freaking forever.
The Tampa.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, I've been saying this forever. If people do not understand how bad this party has gotten, and I don't want to, and I'm not one of those people, the party's evil. Parties aren't evil. People are evil, or people are good, or people in the middle, or they're going through transition in life. Okay? It's a party. It's full of people. It goes through
changes.
Like we have the Nixon era. You know, the Republican Party was 18% of the population coming out of Nixon's debacle, which is nothing compared to the current one we're dealing with. And then we had the Reagan, who won 49 out of 50 states, and the only reason he lost one state was because the guy running was where he was from. You know, he's bound to win
Minnesota.
One.
So, yeah, sure, you betcha.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on. You know, you've got to look at the history. You got to go back to the turn of the century and come forward and educate yourself. Educate yourself on the parties. Educate yourself on the Industrial Revolution and the economy and the Fed and progressivism and what it is and how how the Socialistic Party disappeared. Do you ever wonder why? Well, yeah, because they absorbed themselves in the Democratic Party and took it over. And so, you know, you've had this battle, and that's fine. But when you look at the Republican Party, you've got to look at the last, at least the last 12 years, and realize what you're up against. When you have the things like, I did not hear that King interview, or I missed that one. We can't see it. We can't do it all. It's just so much going on. But when you hear people in your own party, this was Ted Cruz stood up and did what his voters, the people who voted him into office, asked him to do. Rand Paul did it. The Tea Party in the House, you know, that wave that came in 2010, they tried to stand up, but they were too polite and they got a boot on their neck, and so they weren't effective. They were only effective in major battles whenever Boehner was going to, you know, sell us down the drain. But it's the last couple of years it's been, or the last 3 years in the House has been a nightmare. And it didn't have to be. We could have had so many of these things taken care of, you know, 1 and 2 years ago. But because of people like King and Boehner and Cantnot, you know, and the rest of them, because they're all out of that era, that big government Republican era. Well, you know what we called that, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? We called them Democrats. They have infiltrated the party, and it's never going to change. Yeah, it'd be awesome if a third party would rise up and put enough players, you know, and had enough money and put enough players on the across the nation to change it next year, but they're not ready. And so
it's not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen this year. This is the shell. Work with the team inside the shell that actually stands for your principles and make it grow. And for you younger listeners out there, by the way, when Chris said go back to the turn of the century, he did not mean the year that Bush was elected. He meant the last century. I just have to qualify that.
Thank you.
But look, Ted Cruz is back there.
That's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, they're taking slings and arrows.
You think you've heard the Republican
Party brand? And they're not
ruining
the brand.
Not remotely, but I also think far too many people are worried about politics. Listen, if we worry about what is impacting the American people, the politics will take care of itself. The politicians that are gazing at polls, there is a reason why the most common sentiment across this country is that politicians in Washington aren't listening to us. There's a reason why Congress has 10 to 15% approval rating, because in both parties, the politicians in Washington try to maintain their power instead of listening to the American people.
But again, you know, you can listen to various portions of the American public, and we've seen poll after poll showing indeed that Americans are split about the president's plan. But in the portion of people that don't like it, includes a portion of people who do want single payer, who think it doesn't go far enough. It is existing law that you are trying to overturn. Why not just get out there and win elections and overturn it with a Republican Senate and a Republican House and a Republican in the White House?
Well, listen,
instead of shutting down the government, which I think you would concede hurts people who had nothing to do with Obamacare.
Listen, we did have an election, and Republicans won a majority of the House of Representatives. And the Constitution gives the House of Representatives the principal responsibility for appropriations for spending. There was a press conference last week where Harry Reid said, who is John Boehner to decide what our priorities should be in spending? Well, he's the Speaker of the House, and the Constitution gives him that authority. Now, there was also a press conference that I know you're familiar with, in which a reporter from CNN, Dana Bash, asked him about the NIH funding for the National Institute for Health.
Right.
He said, if you can save one kid with cancer, isn't it worth doing it? And his response, he said, why would I care about that? And then he proceeded to lecture and insult her. Now, listen, Dana, as you know, is not some right-wing kook. She was doing her job, and the response from the Democrats was, how dare you question us? We're going to shut down everything, and we don't intend to budge. That's not a reasonable position, Ken.
Bingo.
I got to close it off.
Bingo.
Yeah, exactly. And since he brought up Reed, let's go ahead and listen to what he said and just understand something. This is how heartless and cold these people are. It's just a political game to them, and they will say it's for the kids or for the little guy or for the poor whenever it's convenient. But guys
like
Reed
don't
mean it.
The House is presumably going to pass a bill that funds at least the NIH. Given what you said, will you at least pass that? And if not, aren't you playing the same political games that Republicans are?
Listen, Senator Durbin explained that very well. And he did it here, he did it on the floor earlier, as did Senator Schumer. And it's this. What right do they have to pick and choose what part of government is going to be funded? It's obvious what's going on here. You talked about reckless and irresponsible. Wow. What this is all about is Obamacare. They are obsessed. I don't know what other word I can use. I don't know what other word I can use. They are obsessed with this Obamacare thing. It's working now, and it'll continue to work, and people will love it even more than they do now by far. So they have no right to pick and choose.
But if you can help one child who has cancer, why wouldn't you do it?
Listen.
Here it comes.
Why would we want to do that? I have 1,100 people at Nellis Air Force Base that are sitting home. They have a few problems of their own. This is to have someone of your intelligence suggest such a thing. Maybe you're irresponsible.
Look, they eat their own, man. He's condescending to basically a liberal CNN reporter just because she actually asked an honest question, and his response was, you know, I don't care about children. Let them die. I have 1,100 people who don't have jobs that vote, and I've got to get them back to work because I need their votes. That kid's not voting for me. They're not even old enough to vote, and they're not in my district. You know, that's the kind of sickness that infects these people in Washington. And the amazing thing is, you know, what right does the House have to say which part of government they want to fund?
That's called responsibility, not right.
It's a power. It is a power that we, the people, have delegated to the House of Representatives. And the Constitution specifically says it's the House of Representatives. And Majority Leader Reid, you're not in the House of Representatives. That's how it works. Suck it up and negotiate. Call Harry Reid and call the White House and tell them, why are you holding America hostage to force a broken piece of legislation, which you yourself have admitted is broken and have delayed and defunded most of it for corporations and the government and businesses, but not the individual American people? All we want is a delay on that requirement and negotiate with the Republicans in good faith, and let's get this thing done. That's what you need to do. And, of course, you have to call the RINOs, because the RINOs are ready to go with the Democrats. The only thing that's keeping them at bay is you and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, we've only got 28 minutes live, and we're now only on we just wrapped up the second of four areas we were trying to tackle today. Folks, I'm not going to be able to take any calls. We've got a lot of stuff to get through and get it out to you. We're probably going to spill into overtime and maybe even run up against the Blog Talk Radio cutoff. But if you are listening live, and there's a good chunk of you who are, to continue listening live, you have to call in on the phone. The browser will, or your mobile device, will cut you off at midnight in about 27 minutes. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's if you want to continue to listen to the show live. You can always listen to our shows in archive. You just go to the Blog Talk Radio page, blogtalkradio.com, do a search for Tex and Rex. When you find our show, you go to our show page, and it lists all of the shows, including this one. In fact, you could probably start listening to it from the beginning right now if you went there. You go there and you click on it, and you can play it in your browser, you can play it in your mobile device, or you can go below the scrolling graphics and right-click download this episode, and you get an MP3. You listen to it in your MP3 device, or burn a CD or email it to somebody, but get the word out there. We thank all of you who support and share the show and listen live. And there's a good chunk of you. Most people do listen in archives, and we thank you as well. Please continue to share the shows. And remember, they are available in archives, so you don't have to just share it before we air. You can share it, tweet it out, burn MP3, send emails after we air, and it'll be there as a podcast to get this information distilled. Most of the stuff we do is timely, but it's also rather strategic in the sense that it's fairly broad. It'll be relevant up till 2014. Make sure you go to www.don'tfundit.com, and let's quickly try to move on to the debt ceiling, because that's the meme they're giving us now, that this CR and this debt ceiling and the default. And here's a young senator who thinks that it's a bad idea to raise the debt ceiling, and I think it's a very interesting point. Pay attention to him and try to figure out who he is. Young senator who basically says that it's a really bad idea to raise the debt ceiling. And I think you will find it very interesting because he's not saying this right now.
If my Republican friends believe that increasing our debt by almost $800 billion today and more than $3 trillion over the last 5 years is the right thing to do, they should be upfront about it. They should explain why they think that more debt is good for our economy. How can the Republican majority in this Congress explain to their constituents that trillions of dollars of new debt is good for our economy? How can they explain that they think it's fair to force our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren to finance this debt through higher taxes? That's what it'll have to be. Why is it right to increase our nation's dependence on foreign creditors? They should explain this. Maybe they can convince the public they're right. I doubt it. Because most Americans know that increasing debt is the last thing we should be doing. After all, I repeat, the baby boomers are about to retire. Under the circumstances, any credible economist would tell you we should be reducing debt, not increasing it. Democrats won't be making arguments to support this legislation, which will weaken our country. Weaken our country. We're being asked to do what shouldn't be asked of us, to increase the debt to almost $9 trillion. I hope everyone walking down to these desks today will understand what they're doing, what they're doing to our country. On this side of the aisle, we know. Thank you, Madam President.
You know what? They're
Boom.
Just
pretty amazing.
They're just pissed that Bush acted like a Democrat for 8 years, and they didn't get the credit for it.
Yeah, that might be it. But that was very young Senator Harry Reid. I think he was only 312 years old back then. But that was in 2006, and he's singing a different tune today because guess what? It's not a faux elephant in the White House. It's a jackass, and so he has to sing a different tune. Wouldn't it be nice if some of these people, especially these senators, would actually run on one platform and actually govern on the same platform? No. They just shift with the wind. And then when somebody actually does it, like, I don't know, there's a guy from Texas who they said wouldn't win, but he won by a large majority, and most of the people voting for him said defund and repeal Obamacare, and that's what he ran on. So he comes into the Senate, and he actually does that, and then he's getting stabbed in the back by people of his own party for doing what his constituents hired him to do. Pretty amazing, right?
Unbelievable. Yeah, I'm fascinated by this battle, and not because I enjoy trying to keep up with it, because it's exhausting. But if once you get your focus and you know the past and you know what these people said, you know, like Reid or even Obama, I mean, he beat up on Bush, you know, day in and day out and day in and day out on what he did, and blamed everything on Bush and talked about, you know, being unpatriotic and unconstitutional and wrong, and it was going to destroy our country. And now they talk about raising the debt ceiling like it's just a normal thing. And, you know, and here's the thing that just blows me away is, who do we get the money from? Our enemies. It's just mind-boggling.
We
lend
it,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we borrow this money from countries that are taking our wealth and are considered our enemies. Didn't we just go through something about China had hacked our military and got a whole bunch of really, 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 really expensive complete plans on our technology and airplanes and everything like that? And you know, that barely beeped on the mainstream media because it was a Democrat in power. And that's who we're going to borrow another $1 trillion from. I mean,
I didn't know the Chinese hacked our systems for that information. I thought Clinton sold it to them back in the 90s.
Yeah, no, this is the recent one. You know,
no, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Turn of the century.
Yeah, no, it's
thing, you know.
Yeah, the turn of the century, 13 years ago. You're right. I mean, in a sense, China is our economic ally in some sense, but they're also waging an economic war against us, and frankly, because of our devalued neighbors, you kind of can't blame them. But the real enemy is not those who are actually kind enough to buy our worthless paper and lend us money to buy their useless crap. The real enemy is the one that is in control of the worthless paper in the first place, and that's the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a private bank that controls the money supply, contrary to the Constitution, which says that Congress has that power. Again, why do we give revenue, appropriations, and control of the money supply through the Treasury to Congress? Because Congress is, or the House is the body in government that is the closest to the people. They have the most frequent elections, and they represent the you have more representation, even though it's significantly larger population than the Constitution calls for, since we've had, you know, population explosion since we wrote the Constitution. But that's besides the point. It is still the body of the federal government that is closest to the people, and that is why they are vested with these powers, because they're more accountable. Of course, they're only accountable if you hold them to account. And I think that that's exactly what is starting to happen, but it hasn't happened at a large enough clip or massive volume yet. Don't let up. Don't let the House and Senate rhinos cave on this shutdown showdown. First of all, as we already told you, it's not really a shutdown. It's about 17% of government. So you're not saving that much money. Granted, you know, it's a little bit better than none. You're paying all the furloughed employees retroactively for staying home. So let's at least get them back to work, except maybe the IRS. That'd be kind of nice if they stayed home. But let's get some negotiations. The only way that's going to happen is if you force the GOP to stand firm with the conservatives, and that will force Obama and Reid to negotiate, because Obamacare is cracking down around their ears. The public is turning against them. Even if the public blames both parties, which to some extent they should, it's a loss for the Democrats in that regard, because they had the high ground because they control the media. And the fact is that that is the only way you get someone as arrogant as Harry Reid and Barack Obama, both of whom spoke against the debt ceiling when it was Bush's debt, and now are both for it because it's Obama's debt. And here's the really interesting thing. They've been trying to push this thing towards the debt ceiling away from the CR for a long time, since May.
Yep.
And they think that they can win. And the fact is that even Newt Gingrich told the Republicans, don't make this thing about the debt ceiling, you lose, and he knows why. The debt ceiling will be raised. They always raise it. And the fact is that as long as the Federal Reserve is pumping this kind of money, you kind of don't have a choice, and they're going to do it. But you get some spending cuts for it at least. That's what the Republicans have the option of doing. Get some spending cuts for increasing the debt ceiling. But this whole meme about default and the full faith and credit and the global collapse of the economy because we won't raise our debt ceiling and we won't pay our bills is it absolutely, Chris. It's a total, total lie. We have enough money to pay the interest on the debt, and let's look at it this way. Nobody who's holding our worthless paper, including American bond owners, okay, is looking for a return of principal at this point, because for the most part they've probably bought a 10-year bill or something like that. And even if some of those are due, it's not all of it. We don't have to come up with $17 trillion tomorrow. And the fact is that we have enough tax receipts coming in, even though we're not in a recovery, there's still taxes coming in, to cover these interest payments. And if you're responsible, if this whole thing is about being, you know, a responsible debtor, a responsible government, okay, if you're responsible, you pay your bondholders first. You don't pay your shareholders. You don't pay your, those who lent you the money. They're first in line. That's why people are bondholders. And it's interesting enough to note that this president reversed that rule when he took over General Motors and actually moved bond owners away from first position illegally, because
right.
Bond holders are first in line. So whoever you owe the interest to, whether it's Americans who bought bonds, institutional investors who bought bonds, foreign governments who bought bonds, whoever it is, you owe them that interest, you pay that interest. And we have enough revenue to pay the interest without even touching the debt ceiling. So it's an absolute lie designed to scare you. You'd better explain this to people. People confuse deficit and debt. They confuse public debt with unfunded liabilities, total debt. And now they're confusing interest payments on the debt with the debt itself and having to raise and restructure the debt. So don't get confused. There is no imminent default other than the fact that technically since 1971 we've been in default. But besides the point, there's no imminent default if we don't raise the debt ceiling. The only person that I've heard – go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say we hit the debt ceiling in May. So what the hell have we done since May? They figured out a way to, you know, to manipulate the money and keep it going. I mean, the
they ripped off the federal employees. They ripped off the federal employees' thrift savings plan.
I know, but the lies, and that's the frustrating part because, you know, like I say, you got 1,800 different, you know, media centers all spitting the same lies. And they divert from the real conversation, which is what we're trying to do on these shows, is get people the real information. And you know, people are going to do what they're going to do. The government's going to do what it's going to do. But, you know, you as an individual, or, you know, you as in people listening, you know, you need to educate yourself. It's not that complex. It's only complex if you don't pay attention. And then you run to Fox News and CNN trying to get caught up. You know, you're not going to get the answers there. That's the bottom line. You need to understand your economy. You need to understand, you know, what's going on in the money supply and what's going on with the Fed. And, I mean, come on. We are dealing with what do we spend? We spend $1.2 trillion a year in the federal government, more than we ever have before.
Yeah, more than we take in.
We got a
more
problem.
Than we take in.
And nobody will talk about waste and abuse and fraud, except for a couple of senators. Who's the senator who does the report all the time? Trying to remember him. That's embarrassing. I don't remember his name.
Who's that?
But the senator who does the waste and abuse and fraud report all the time. He's a good guy. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
Sessions? You're talking about Sessions?
Yeah, and Sessions. And the thing is that nobody is talking about reform. Nobody is talking about fixing the crime, the waste, the abuse. Nobody's talking about, you know, it's just insanity where we're at. And yet the conversation is this ping pong ball match at over things that really don't matter, are not really the argument. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. They distract and they conflate terms. So when they talk about this default because of not raising the debt ceiling and that they're using it as a political ploy to negotiate, well, use it to negotiate. Harry Reid and Obama used it to negotiate when it was Bush. Why can't John Boehner and Mitch McConnell use it to negotiate now that it's Obama? I mean, this is how politics is done. It's not supposed to be a friendly sport. This is serious stuff. This is your money. This is your national security. This is your life. This is your liberty. These people are talking about serious stuff. It's not a fucking game. So they had better take it seriously, and they had better fight. You know, if you're a committed lefty, fine. You're wrong, but that's fine. That's your position. And if you're committed conservative, then, you know, you're at odds. And it isn't about, well, let's just learn to get along and see how we can just screw everything up. No, I want you to fight on principle. And that's what it's supposed to be messy. It's supposed to be slow. It's supposed to be checks and balances. This is the way it was built. This is how it is supposed to work. And the way that it works is they use the tools that are available to them given by the Constitution, and you use the tools that are available to you, which is massive numbers and massive pressure to tell them what you want. And don't be selfish about it. Be honest about it. We don't want more debt because it's terrible for the economy. But we'll accept it in the short term if we get some spending cuts. We don't want Obamacare because it adds another $2.2 trillion over the next 10 years onto the economy, and it actually crushes it and costs jobs. It's just the cost is $2.2. That's beyond the secondary cost of destroying the economy, so we don't want it. But we're willing to accept the delay, okay? That's how it's done. So get on point. Tell them what's going on. Make them do it. And the interesting thing is that they're using these scare tactics to frighten you. And somehow you think because you heard it on television that the idiots on TV know what they're talking about, they're smart. For the most part, most of them, and I'm not maligning everybody, there are some good people on there, but for the most part, these people are not smarter than you, and they don't know more than you do. And you can tell because whenever they go off the teleprompter, just like the president, they sound like fucking idiots. They only sound intelligent when someone writes the copy for them. Okay, and when you think about it, right? And I don't care which channel it is. If it's Morning Joe with his decaffeinated, retarded show with bad coffee and that New World Order psycho Brzezinski, or crunchy granola eating creeps on CNN, or the porn star on Headline News, or Fox and Fools. I don't care who it is. Okay, the GMA. It doesn't matter. These people are not highly intelligent. Their qualifications for getting on the air, not that impressive. I mean, Steve Ducey is a weatherman. Brian Kilmeade is the sports guy. And now they got Elizabeth Hasselbeck there. What's her claim to fame? She was on Survivor. And then she did that insipid show with those other cackling witches, The View, and now she's giving you the important news in the morning, interviewing people like Rand Paul and Tucker Carlson. The other day was talking to her about how because of these cuts illegally, okay, the president has made it illegal for Catholic priests to celebrate Mass on base or baptize a baby on base. He was talking about that, and she, you know, they looked at him like, I don't know what you just said. So he repeated it. And they still looked at him like they didn't know what he was talking about. So be cautious and don't think just because it came off the TV that somehow it's well-researched and intelligent and commentary that's worth listening to. For the most part, it's bullcrap. Sift through it. Get online. Go to good sources like the Tex and Rex Show or alternative media and listen to people who know what they're talking about, especially about economics. Someone like Senator Rand Paul or his dad, Ron Paul, and Ted Cruz, these people actually give you facts and information. Listen to it. And it's hard to find sometimes. That's why we play the clips. Here's Rand Paul.
Nancy Pelosi was talking about are all above the sequester. There are no numbers equal to the sequester. They're above the sequester. So we're not getting any great spending reduction out of this. I probably can't vote for a continuing resolution that's above the sequester because it's one of the better things we've done in the last couple of years to control spending. But this is a big debate, and it's a debate not about us obsessed with one thing. It's a big debate over Congress has the power of the purse. Congress is supposed to have oversight, and when a program's not going to work or it spends too much money here or there, that's what Congress is for. You have a separation of powers. And when we have divided government, it means we have to get together and negotiate. The fact that they won't negotiate, I think, really is untenable, and I think they're going to have to eventually talk to us.
Peter King was on this show last night, and he blamed all of this on one person, a person that you've been very closely affiliated with. That person, of course, is Ted Cruz, and I wanted to play for you, Senator, what Peter King said about Senator Cruz.
The Republicans have to be more responsible. We have this wing of 30 or 40 or 50 people who are driving us over a cliff that has to end. We have to stop listening to Ted Cruz.
What do you say to that? I mean, there are a lot of Republicans who say that what this core group, a minority group in your party, is doing is destroying your party. Peter King is one of them, but he is certainly not alone.
Yeah. I think it's unfair, actually, because I think the one thing actually that we're very unified on, and you've seen, not everybody agreed on the tactics of how the fight went along. I think that's, I can admit that. Everybody admits that. However, on Obamacare, we're absolutely united. The Republican Senate caucus is absolutely united. We shouldn't fund it. It's bad for America. And America's going to really find this out over the next year or two. It's a disaster for us. I think we're united in the House, but we're also willing to compromise. And that's what the American people need to know. We've been giving and giving and giving, and the president's saying, my way or the highway, and I don't think that's what the American people want.
What if it is such a disaster, though, don't you gain the most by letting it happen and letting it be a disaster? Because now if it's even 1% of success, it might look like a success. I mean, I'm just, you know, Jack Welch said today Republicans have made a bonehead play, which was a, you know, sort of slang way of saying it. He said you're not going to defund his signature legislation. And the polling shows that the American people seem to agree with that. They say avoid the government shutdown is more important than dealing with Obamacare. They say raising the debt ceiling is more important than delaying Obamacare.
I'm not so sure it's as clear-cut as you make it out to be. I think people, particularly the people who elected me, wanted me to stand up and fight on Obamacare. They think it's bad. They think it's going to reduce our choices. I think it takes away your freedom of choice. You're going to have, like in my state, you're going to have four choices where you once had 50 choices. You're going to have one insurance company where you once had 37 insurance companies. So it does take away choice. And my people, they voted for me. 61% of my state voted for Romney. They want me to stand up and fight, but they also don't want the government shut down. So I have been one that says fight, and when we lose, then we have to negotiate. We lost on defunding. I fought for defunding, but we lost. Mm-hmm. The president wants 100%, though, and should he not need to negotiate to get somewhere in the middle in order to get a compromise?
Now, Senator, one final question to you. You just heard Harry Reid when he was asked by the reporters there. From that meeting, do you feel that the debt ceiling will be broached? And, of course, the debt ceiling breached, I'm sorry, is the big thing. That is much bigger than this government shutdown, at least as pertains to the United States economy. And he seemed to indicate that from that meeting, yes, he thinks that it will be. But Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs, also met with the president today, and he said, we are the most important economy in the world. We're the reserve currency of the world. Payments have to go out to people. If money doesn't flow in, money doesn't flow out.
Are you willing
to let the debt ceiling be, to not extend it?
I'm for taking default completely off the table and promising to the American people and to the markets, to Wall Street, that we will all pay the interest on the debt as a priority. You know how we do that? We bring in $250 billion in tax revenue every month. The debt payment's about $30 billion. We just promise we'll always pay it. What's going on is, interestingly, the Democrats are scaring people, saying we might not pay it because Republicans don't want to raise the debt ceiling. If you don't raise the debt ceiling, what that means is you'd have a balanced budget. It doesn't mean you wouldn't pay your bills. We should pay the interest, and we should never scare the markets. So if I were in charge, I would say absolutely we will never default, and I would pass a law saying that the first revenue every month, the first revenue has to go to pay the interest.
Right, but it's still defaulting if you're late on Social Security payments or anything like
why
that.
Should
and that's
you, why,
still the full
why should
faith
be,
and credit.
Why would you be late on your Social Security payments? We have a bill that's called the Full Faith and Credit Bill, and we've passed it in the House before. We've introduced it in the Senate, and it says you pay Social Security, you pay Medicare, you pay your soldiers' salaries, and you pay the interest on the debt. We've got money for all of that.
Bingo.
Oh. Did you see the way he handled her? I mean, she was trying so hard to spin it up. And
they want everybody scared that the United States is going to fall because we won't borrow money from our so-called enemy. I mean, that's how insane.
That's not.
It's beyond.
Yeah, that's not why we're going to fall. I mean, and why is Obama meeting with the banker? Oh, I don't know, because that's probably his boss. Okay, that's who his boss is. So all you Obama lovers out there, you think that he's such a cool guy and he's doing all this good stuff and, he's finally transforming America. We're on our way to single-payer system. He's not doing shit. He's taking orders from Morgan Chase. That's who he's taking orders from. And, this whole bullshit about we're the reserve currency in the world, well, I mean, to some extent, but our currency is monopoly money. We're not going to default because we're not going to pay the interest on the debt. We're going to default because the money's fucking worthless. It's not backed by gold. It's not backed by anything. We're a $16 trillion economy with a $17 trillion debt, and we're adding all these regulations and Obamacare and extra taxes to unfunded liabilities. Actually, it's closer to $210 trillion, but that's neither here nor there. It's an unpayable amount. But the bottom line is it's fake money. All right, so don't worry about raising they're going to raise the debt ceiling, but that's got nothing to do with not paying your interest, and it's got nothing to do with the default. We went into default in 1971. That's when we went into default, and the only thing backing up your money right now is the fact that you can blow up the world better and faster than anybody else. But the others are catching up, and they're going to move away from the dollar. And unless you make this government start moving back towards the right so that we can come down off this Fed junkie diet that we're on and actually get a U.S. Treasury-backed, commodity-backed currency and stabilize this thing, we ain't going to make it a decade. So this is an existential problem. So don't think for a second this is about some kind of namby-pamby insurance reform that's the signature piece of this second-term loser. Okay, this is not about that. This is about whether the Constitution is the – the Democrats have been running this meme that, oh, Obamacare is the law of the land and the Supreme Court found it constitutional. Well, they found the same thing with African slavery, the fugitive slave law, the border, and DOMA. Now, border and DOMA are not being enforced by the Obama administration, and I don't think that there's anybody outside of the KKK that wants us to bring back slavery and the fugitive slave law. So just because something is law and the Supreme Court decided that it was constitutional doesn't mean you can't get rid of it because it's wrong. Okay? So it's real simple. The supreme law of the land is the U.S. Constitution, not the so-called Patient and Protection and Affordable Care Act. It's the Constitution, and that's what this battle is about, and you have champions fighting for you. Have you called them to thank them? Can you imagine what kind of – I mean, imagine the meeting – by the way, folks, we're about to go off the air, so you got to call in if you want to go live. But imagine if you're Ted Cruz and Mike Lee in a room with 40 of your colleagues in the Senate, and they turn on you because of what you're doing, because of the people elected you ask you to do it. Have you called them to thank them for doing this? please do. Call Rand Paul, call Ted Cruz, call Mike Lee, call Louie Gohmert. Call them and thank them for doing the job that they're doing, and call the other guys and tell them to get on board. That's how you get things done.
Very simple conversation to have. 2014, you're up for re-election. You better stand with the people who are trying to save this country. Very simple.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It really is. And it is. It's just, you know, we're everybody, you know, you got the affordable, you know, you got Obamacare, you've got the debt ceiling, you've got 2014, all the houses up for re-election, and a 30-year Senate. And we already have recall petitions going, you know, starting up on some of these guys who have just, you know, that aren't out in 2014. So there's a wave coming. And you know, I find it very interesting because having been alive before the turn of the century, and around and politically aware before the Tea Party ever formed, all the conversations we're having, this is not some, you know, some Tea Party conversation. This is the American conversation I had all my life. You know, it was never about a central government. It was never about, you know, unfunded liabilities that we'll never be able to pay back. It was never about let's go bomb the world, you know, and force these countries to trade with us after we blow them to crap. I mean, it is this whole, this last 12 years, we have morphed into some kind of insanity in this country. And if we don't get a grip on it now, I don't, you know, I have no idea. I'm not going to go conspiratorial on anybody, but we're in a mess. And you were talking about the issue of, you know, the international trade dollar, you know, we're the reserve currency of the world. That's changing, folks. And you can do the research on it, because I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but do the flipping research on it. Research BRICS, B-R-I-C-S, and research, which is Brazil, India, China, Russia, in South America, and all the countries that they're trading with, and all those trade deals that are going on, and all those inner monetary deals that they're setting up amongst themselves that do not involve the U.S. reserve note anymore. This battle, you know, the rest of the world is sick of, you know, you think you're sick of it. Well, what if you have a whole country to run and your whole country's tied to a reserve dollar and they got to stand there on the other side of the world not able to get involved in politics in this country and watch these dip crap heads, you know, make these stupid decisions, not fix our economy, not make the tough decisions that are necessary to, you know, turn this country around. And these other countries, whether it be Brazil or China or Russia or any of them, they're getting big enough because a lot of them have done a lot better than we have through this recession because they weren't tied to our insane Congress like we are. And they've made the tough decisions, and their economies have been improving and or growing. You know, when you look at Russia, they got an 8% debt to GDP. 8%. They got to be looking at us like we're nuts. You know, now China has a much higher one, but they also have a huge economy, and they have manufacturing, which we run offshore, actually run to China and other countries. So, you know, these countries are pooling together going, we want out of this nightmare because your politicians are idiots and they won't fix the problems. And so this concept of a reserve dollar is really up for negotiation right now around the world. Now, I remember when I first started researching this, it was just a blip on the radar screen. Now it's big. And it ain't going to stop because these people are sick of us.
I'm with the BRICS. I want out of this. I don't want this worthless Federal Reserve note as our currency. I mean, folks, let's listen to somebody
who's actually 20 years ago. It's insane now.
Well, there's somebody who's been telling you this stuff and fighting for it for 40 years. Okay?
Yep.
Why don't you listen to Rand Paul's dad?
I make people at home clear at this Congress, and I agree with you that there's a lot of fear-mongering going on. You're really technically only in default if you don't make good on interest payments to bondholders. And I would imagine that we sort of reprioritize if we ever get to that position to make sure we don't do that.
Yeah, they're going to do it. They are not going to default. All governments like ours, when they get this big and this much debt, they default, but it's by defaulting by giving them money with less value, and they're very good at that. But they're not going to not send the checks out. Besides, just think of what happened in 2009 when the financial system worldwide was collapsing. The Fed was involved with trillions. Some people estimate up to $15 trillion in secret. They were able to bail out banks, foreign governments, foreign central banks, and nobody even knew what they were doing. So are they going to allow our treasury bills, the interest, not to be paid? They're capable of doing whatever they want to do, and all they have to do is write an executive order or have the Fed do it or whatever.
Well, that's what might happen. You're right. The president can always intervene and say, that's it, and he'll let the lawyers argue it out.
You know, if they don't even come to Congress, you know, for a declaration of war, and Obama was always proud of the fact, I don't need to go to Congress for that. I want these regulations on environment. I'll just do it. I'll write the regulation. So they are arrogant. They're out of control. And that's why we have to have the basic question asked, what really do the people of this country want their government to do? Do they want to spend all this money, or do we want a government that's limited in scope and the protection of liberty and protection of the markets and have a sound currency and a strong military to defend our country? But they're not asking that question. They're saying, how are we going to pull this off? And how many, you know, are we going to go to $90 billion or $120, you know, to keep this thing going of monetizing this debt? At the same time, the Congress is working on the absolute assumption that this deficit doesn't matter as long as we have the Fed there. And the Fed will monetize because we're too big to fail. Except the failure comes when we have higher interest rates and we can't even pay the interest, without printing more money. And then the interest rates going up, then you're going to have the big default and the liquidation and the chaos. But I don't think that's going to come on October 17th. They'll work something out, or they'll just pay it on the side, and the Fed will take care of us. You know, they're all powerful.
They're always there. They're always there. Ron Paul.
that's your topic. You run with it. Yeah. Go ahead. Nailed it.
Again and again. Plus, they got the $85 billion a month that the Fed is printing right now and dumping into the market. You know, it's just all. I don't know, man. Sometimes when you try to grasp, it's like trying to catch bubbles that you blow out of those little, things that kids play with. You know, they just pop, 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 pop. You can't even get your hands on this stuff anymore. The United States has done some dumb things, you know, through the years. The Federal Reserve was a major one. But when you look at all the recessions up until this last one, typically, they allowed the correction to some degree to happen. They tried to lessen the pain, but we have never printed and borrowed like we have in the last 4 years, or the last, let's talk about 12 years, because or 8 years, because of what Bush started going into it. But it's beyond, and I've listened to several different people who are pretty sharp on this stuff, on monetary issues. And they're going, nobody can predict where this is going. They don't even know what they're doing. They've never gone this far before. So the question is do they believe that it's just going to totally crash and they've got a new system set in place? Or do they honestly, are they so freaking freaked out that they don't know what to do? I mean, most of the big money people have moved their money offshore. Why? Why, if they're so confident that what we're doing is going to work, why is there trillions of dollars what's that?
Confiscation is coming. That's why they've moved it offshore.
Conversation right there.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't think we're going to finish today's conversation because we're already 10 minutes into overtime and this thing's going to cut us off soon. The only one clip that we're going to get to, maybe we'll do an extra show, I'm not promising, but the only clip we'll get to is Judge Napolitano talking about how extra-constitutional executive is working, because you need to understand that. That's why we need to put pressure through the Congress, especially the conservatives like Cruz and Paul and Lee. But here's the interesting thing. You have to understand the proper functioning of the artificially created boom-bust cycle. And you said that this bubble is the biggest. Yes, because, you know, I'll just go back to the 90s, okay, because that's the last time we had a government shutdown. Then you had, you know, the dot-com bubble. And that popped, right? And then Greenspan created the housing/mortgage bubble, and that popped, right? So then they created the currency bubble. And that's where we are now. And it's like the bubble of all bubbles. And the thing is that with these bubbles that have been going on ever since the friggin' Federal Reserve came online 100 years ago, okay, you've been having these boom-bust cycles, and they've been progressively getting bigger, deeper, and shorter.
And faster.
Okay? Now, the first one that happened in 1920, not counting the one, you know, for World War One, or at that time the Great War, all right, they didn't do that much, and it was over in 18 months. And that was actually in some ways worse than the one that happened in 29. But in 29, they did all sorts of crap. You know, the FDR took Hoover's programs, just like Obama took Bush's programs. Remember, Hoover was a Republican. FDR took his crappy policies and put them on steroids and called it a New Deal. Obama took all of Bush's crappy policies, put them on steroids, and called it Hopi Changey Peace, except that it's not Hopi, it's not Changey, and it's just war, okay? But what happens is they take these policies, they repackage them, and they run with the program. The Federal Reserve does all sorts of crazy stuff, and every time that something happens, we give the Federal Reserve more levers and buttons and bells and whistles to play with. The bubbles get bigger, and they pop sooner, and they pop deeper. And right now we're coming towards the tail end of this last bubble they've created. The only way that they see out of it is to print, print, print. There's no taper. Ben Bernanke floated the idea of a taper. There's no taper. And the fact is that the only thing that you can do when the thing is about to pop, if you can't reinflate another bubble, and we've practically got nothing else to reinflate a bubble with, the only thing you can do, blow up the world and confiscate wealth. That's it. And that's where this is headed if you don't stop it. And when I say you, I mean you. Yes, you. Oh, I'm just me. I just get to vote in November, and, you know, I kind of want to watch a little bit of Fox News, maybe some CNN, but I really, really want to watch
American Idol,
Douchebags, and The X Factor. Well, no, because everything that you do during the week, whether you go to work or you run your business or you drop your kids off of school or you buy something from Amazon.com, which now you have to fucking pay taxes on if it's a third-party seller, anything that you do is contingent upon this. And if you don't make the stand now, together as a grassroots tsunami, you can kiss your money. Well, actually, that's not true. You will soon have more money than you have ever imagined, and it won't buy you shit. That's what will happen. You will be a multimillionaire. Ask some of the people in Zimbabwe. They're trillionaires. It doesn't buy you anything. It won't buy you a can of beans. It won't buy you an MRE. It won't buy you a water filtration system. It won't buy you anything. So you'd better get this thing fixed. And if they don't fix this thing, things are going to implode. Things like Social Security. Things like the SNAP program. Can you imagine what happens in a country when 47 million people can't fucking feed themselves and they're relying on the government and all of a sudden the SNAP card doesn't work? Can you imagine what would happen? Just think about what happened the last time, if you live in an area that gets snow, the last time there was a threat of a snowstorm and you ran to the grocery store with every other douchebag and tried to buy toilet paper, eggs, and bread, and there wasn't anything on the shelves. Remember, all your grocery stores with all the choices and all the stocks that they've got, they have no more than enough supply to satisfy demand for 72 hours. That means if trucks are not coming to that grocery store every 3 days, it would be empty. Okay, or if you have a fire in the Southwest and you can't get to the grocery store, that sort of stuff. That's what happens just under normal circumstances. Imagine what happens when 47 million people go to swipe their SNAP card to get food and it doesn't work. What do you think is going to happen? That's what this pop is about, and it has nothing to do with the debt ceiling. It has everything to do with the Fed printing money. So get these people to fix this thing. That's what you have to do. And the fact is that this executive is way out of bounds. It's not just Obama. I mean, all of them have been doing it lately. But this guy's just taking it to a whole new level. Because we're running out of time, there's a lot of other information we wanted to get out to you. Hopefully we can get it to you later. But you really need to understand how the executive power works extra-constitutionally. And the only way that you can pressure him to quit using it as a dictator is to have Congress put him back in his place as the executive who executes the laws that they pass and doesn't get to do more and shouldn't do any less, okay? That's what it's about, and the only way that happens is if you are aware of the game and you put pressure on them to do their jobs. It's a six-minute clip. It's going to be the last clip that we play, and then we're going to go to final thoughts.
Judge Andrew Napolitano. Hi, Judge. How are you?
I'm great, Tim. Pleasure to be on with you, my friend.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Now, plenty going on here in Washington, and the big story, of course, is Obamacare, the shutdown. The legal question I have for you surrounding this is, this administration has a law in place, the Affordable Health Care Act, and they're kind of picking and choosing which parts of that law to enforce. They've arbitrarily given people an extension, if you're a big business, if you're insurance companies, but for the individual mandate, they're keeping the law intact as it was. Do they actually have the authority to go ahead and pick and choose parts of the law to enforce and pick and choose parts of law to delay?
Well, the general answer to your question is no. But as a practical matter, it is nearly impossible for anyone to challenge the president when he does that. And as much as I am profoundly of the view that this statute is unconstitutional, Barack Obama is not the first president to do this, and all modern presidents have violated their oath faithfully to uphold the law. The reason I emphasize faithfully is because that language is not only in the oath of office, it's in the Constitution itself, meaning you have to uphold the laws whether you like them or not, whether you agree with them or not, whether they offend your foes or help your enemies or not, you have no choice. Nevertheless, all modern presidents have done that. George W. Bush once signed into law a statute prohibiting federal agents from opening mail before the recipient of the mail gets it. That's pretty basic. But as he signed it, as he actually signed it, he said, I have no intention of enforcing this. Barack Obama has taken the most complex law in modern times, maybe ever, 2,700 pages in length, and willy-nilly decided this will apply to you, this won't apply to you, I'll give you an extension on that, I won't give you an extension on that. But as a practical matter, no one is in a position to go to a judge and say, order him to enforce the entire statute, because the court would say, you know what, you just reelected him, you're stuck with him.
All right, let's just take a step further down that road then, because the immigration law is another example of that, where they have chosen not to enforce parts of the existing law. And, I mean, they've put out written documents that specifically say, do not follow this. They've done the same thing now with federal drug law. Does anybody in any of those situations have the authority to challenge? Does an individual person in the United States, does a member of Congress, does anybody have the ability to tell this president, wait?
It would be a very circuitous route to the challenge, and I'll tell you why. The Constitution does not permit federal judges to say, this is right, this is wrong, this is constitutional, this is unconstitutional. Unless, in the absence of a real case or controversy. The reason for the case or controversy requirement is to prevent federal judges from becoming a super legislature where they just invalidated laws,
right,
or invalidated presidential behavior, or upheld laws or upheld presidential behavior on the basis of their own value judgment. So without a case or controversy, federal judges are powerless. A case or controversy requires a real plaintiff and a real defendant, and it requires a plaintiff distinct from all others. Meaning, if I strike you in your vehicle with my vehicle, you can sue me. But if I, as the government, raise taxes on everybody that strikes somebody with their vehicles, then someone whose taxes has gone up cannot sue me, because they're all in the same situation. So the plaintiff must have an injury distinct from all others. So, back to your hypothetical. If someone in Arizona were harmed because the federal government failed to enforce immigration laws, and that harm were unique to that individual, they might be in a position to challenge the failure to enforce the law. But short of that, the courts would say, if you don't like the way Barack Obama is enforcing federal law, vote him out of office. If it's too late to vote him out of office, vote into office a Congress that will force his hand. But don't come to us when he won't do his job. This is a political issue.
So depending on the backbone of the president, they could push this pretty far down the road.
Yes. The president is far too powerful. The executive is far too powerful in our system. Remember, the three systems are supposed to be equal.
Right.
If you don't mind segueing for a moment, and I know our time is limited, into the NSA spying. Think about this. The NSA and the executive branch have engaged in spying so massive that it's breathtaking. Right now we know that they have at their fingertips every phone call, every text, every email, every utility bill, every banking statement, every credit card bill of every American in the United States of America since early 2011. The courts that have authorized this have been sworn to secrecy. The members of Congress who knew about it, only about 8 of them, have been sworn to secrecy, to the point where the courts themselves and the members of Congress themselves are afraid to discuss this openly for fear that they could be prosecuted. That's how powerful the executive has become. The executive has permitted himself, the president has permitted himself to act like a dictator by, when he must share what he's doing with others, swearing the others to secrecy. That is not a representative democracy when people in the government know an awful truth and can't reveal it to anyone.
Yesterday,
back to, can the president exempt people from Obamacare?
Yeah.
Yes, he can, because the Congress and the courts let him get away with it.
Fair enough. Judge
Congress and the courts let him get away with it. Well, make Congress not get away with it. Make D.C. listen. Stand with the conservatives and put pressure on, and you'll see the tide turn. If the Republicans don't cave, it empowers the conservatives, it diminishes the president, and it'll actually curtail this stuff. Now, let's just understand what this means. This guy is acting extra-constitutionally and playing politics with this shutdown, like shutting down monuments in Washington, D.C. that are open to
the
public always.
Oceans in Florida.
Yeah.
Oceans
trying to
Florida.
Shut down the oceans in Florida, okay? I mean, it's insane.
It
look, these
great.
Monuments are open all the time, and there's nobody there manning them. He's actually paying to have police put up barricades and prevent people from entering. And, you know, shutting down national parks. Now, the first question I have is, why do we have national parks outside of the federal district anyway? Shouldn't they be state parks? But that's neither here nor there. You have private historical places like Mount Vernon, the home of General Washington, who fought for our freedom for 8 years against the most powerful military in the world. You have the first president of these United States. His home, okay, is open for business, and it's mostly privately funded. Yet Obama decided to shut down the tour bus turns and shut down the roads that access Mount Vernon. Okay, he shut down. There's not far from Mount Vernon in McLean, Virginia. There's a colonial park, the Claude Moore Colonial Farm. It's technically under the national park system. However, it takes $0 from the federal government. Is 100% privately funded. Okay, he shut it down. Had rangers go there, put up barricades. When the McLean Chamber of Commerce was having an event there, they had to relocate that very day to a new location, which means they had to tell everybody who belongs to the chamber that we're meeting now in this other place, and they had to go arrange things and get the food over there. The director of the Claude Moore Colonial Farm says that they've already lost over $20,000 in revenue because they were forced to shut down, and they don't take a penny from the federal government. They don't cost the federal government anything. And they're not going to recover that money. The furloughed employees are going to get paid. All these other government agencies are going to get funded once this thing is over. This farm is not going to get funded. It could go out of business. It could, a piece of colonial history could disappear because of this. Now, those things are interesting and anecdotal, and they're important to pay attention to because they're happening all over the country. Those are just a couple of points. But the real scary thing, and this is the really scary thing, this guy is playing games with your national security. Other than this operation in Somalia and Libya, where they got some terrorists, interesting timing on that, by the way, and I'm going to give kudos to our military, our intelligence apparatus, and our SEALs, not the guy that signed off on it because he's just a temporary commander-in-chief, okay? But this guy is playing games with your national security because despite the fact that both chambers, including Reid's majority Senate, passed a military spending bill, Obama has directed them to make essential military people into non-essential, and despite the full funding of the military, to make them not come to work. People like, oh, I don't know, airplane mechanics. Now, how do you launch your planes if your mechanics aren't maintaining them? And he's also diminished the Air Force's ability to oversee and manage our nuclear arsenal. Our nuclear arsenal is now not unmanned, but it is relatively undermanned, okay? Unless you're going to put Skynet in there, you know how that one works out. You're basically risking our national security because this guy wants to play political games with the shutdown because he wants to win a victory for a fucked-up health insurance reform bill that doesn't work. That's how messed up this is, okay? He's jeopardizing our national security to play these games. You've got to stop him. You. You have to stop them. You have to get the information out there. You have to create a force multiplier. You have to get 10 other people every week to do what you're doing. Call the House, call the Senate, and get them to come to negotiations, fund the government, delay Obamacare, and force this president to quit screwing around with our country, with our economy, and everything else that he's doing. That's what you have to do. Go, Chris.
Yeah. Well, no, it's pretty basic. I mean, it's almost like a sci-fi, you know, like some kind of insane movie. And the thing is if you'll take the time, you know, to follow up on this stuff and put it all together and connect the dots, you'll see the insanity of it, and you realize that these guys who are trying to save our country need your help. They can't do it on their own. Stand on the sidelines and posting on Facebook and saying, rah, 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 go, Ted, go. You know, Ted's up there going, this is not going to change if people don't get involved. And the proof, Syria, immigration, the Second Amendment issues, people rose up and got involved. I don't know what happened between 2010 and 2013, but I understand people are wary. I understand people are confused. I understand they're frustrated. You know, they didn't want to see a second term. Well, you got a second term. Okay, now you got to fight. It's your country. Where else are you going to go? I mean, it's really, really gets down to it. Some basic things here. Where are you going to go if this thing turns into Greece or turns into Europe? Because that's the direction they want to take it. And the only difference is that the world used to have economies, you know, to feed that socialistic machine, even though it was a failed proposition. We don't have the economy to go this direction. So, you know, we're running out of time. You know, it's just like I say, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but this is just, it's beyond pale. And you have to make a decision. It's your country. It's your life. And what are you going to do about it? You know, that's really what it boils down to. And, you know, you got to.
So why don't you draw a red line?
Yeah.
Why don't you draw a red line for them?
Well, he blamed us anyway after he said it was his red line.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, no, that's my input on that. I mean, it can be confusing, it can be overwhelming, but you know what? The result, what these people are pushing this country forward, this fundamental change, if it's got you freaked out, then you've got to focus on things that matter and fight the good fight and get behind the people who are willing to put it all on the line, you know, to win. I mean, it's just that simple. Go ahead.
Yep. No, absolutely. And you can catch up with Captain Caveman on Facebook at Coalition of Freedom. I strongly suggest if you want to get the ability to really get some good news sources and cross-reference them and check them so that you can apply your own critical thinking and come up with the conclusions, Coalition of Freedom is a great place to do it because Chris puts up these big pictures of these topics and all the articles, clips, and comments and discussion goes under those. So you're not just hopping around, you know, a Facebook group with 6 million and one posts that are meaningless and interrelated and not related. This is all pretty well organized. So Coalition of Freedom on Facebook, go there and take a look at it. It'll help you get into different news sources, cross-reference them, because I got to tell you, Fox News is not your friend's conservative. Fox News is not your friend. They have just enough sense to give you some conservative commentary and to have people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee on, all right? But then they'll fill it with all sorts of leftist crap and tell you that Peter King, Jihad Jane McComed, Lindsay Lightness Loafers Graham, Bob Lost His Cork Corker, and Carl Ham Rove are actually conservatives looking out for your interests. They're not.
Oh,
all right? They're only looking out for their interest. They want to pretend to be conservatives because that's the brand that you're looking for, the Republican brand you're looking for. But then they govern as typical status corporatists and bend over backwards to give Obama and the left exactly what they want. And right now, those guys are actually being deployed by the left. They're being deployed by Reid and deployed by Obama to put a kibosh on Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul and the Tea Party hostage takers in the House. That's what's going on. Now, they haven't said it publicly yet because of you, because you're giving too much power to the conservatives, okay? They're not ready to upset you yet. They're going to massage you a little bit and get you to kind of get fed up with the pain that this so-called shutdown is causing to get you to finally cave so that you will make the conservatives in the House cave. Don't. You hold the line. You don't cave. You increase the numbers, and you apply more pressure, and you watch the Republicans stand firm, because remember something. They want to be the controlled opposition permanent minority, but every single one of those losers wants to be part of that permanent minority, and they don't want to risk their seat by speaking out, other than guys like Peter King, who maybe has already decided that he's going to go become an investment banker like all the other losers who leave Congress. Either way, you have to apply the pressure. Now is the time. So we covered a lot tonight. We didn't cover everything we wanted, but in simple terms, the media spin machine is selling you this lie that the government is shut down. I really wish for once they would make good on this promise and actually shut it down just for a week so we'll see what it's like. It probably won't be that bad, and I'm not talking about the military. I'm talking about the federal government. Okay? This is a 17% partial shutdown, and Obama is twisting it to make it seem bigger by making public displays at parks and you know, kids with cancer and all this kind of stuff. That's a public display. Because the simple fact is there was enough money at NIH to take care of all the kids that are in the cancer research programs, but they decided instead it was more important to feed the lab rats. Okay? It's designed to make it look, because it's the Republican shutdown, and then it's the Tea Party shutdown, then it's the Boehner shutdown. They keep kind of sell you that and then make it bad. Well, the reality is this is Obama's shutdown, and he's the one who's making it suck, because 17% ain't all that bad, and it wouldn't last that long anyway. Come to the negotiating table. Tell the president to come to the negotiating table and work with the Republicans. They've already come 3 degrees towards him, okay? So don't believe the media. Watch out for them, because they are not reporters. They are not journalists. They are the spin machine for the corporatists and the White House. That's who they are. Okay, and the other thing is, don't fall for this lie that the Republicans are unified. They're not unified. They're pretending to be. They pretend to be against Obamacare. But when push comes to shove and it's actually a real vote, the squishes cave. And then they turn on the conservatives. We did a show. We did 4 shows in September about this. The last one, part 4, I did a small vignette version of it. It's 79 minutes. You can check it out on the Tex and Rex show page or go down into our Blog Talk Radio page. You go to Blog Talk Radio, go down, find the Tex and Rex show, scroll down. It's Cruz versus Corker colloquy. 79 minutes. Chris and I tore apart a colloquy between Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, and Bob Corker, where Bob Corker was running cover for Harry Reid to try to sneak the cloture vote that happened Friday morning in on Thursday evening when you weren't watching. Bob Corker is allegedly a conservative Republican from Tennessee, and he was trying to run cover for Harry Reid against Ted Cruz and Mike Lee. What does that tell you? You should listen to that and share it with people, because I don't think anybody very few people watched that colloquy on C-SPAN as it happened. And since then, people might have seen it on YouTube, but sometimes the terms of parliamentary procedure and the angles that are going on are a little confusing. Chris and I broke it apart. You should really listen to that. It's very, very important. Keep sharing the show. We appreciate it. Like our Tex and Rex show page. Join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia. Go to Coalition of Freedom and get the show out there. You're our only marketing arm. But remember, now is not the time to let up. I know you're probably sick of hearing about the shutdown. You're tired of making your phone calls. You're sick of signing don'tfundit.com and getting people to sign it. And you think, well, we're not funding it anymore. We've already moved off not funding it. We've gone to, you know, delaying it. Same petition. It gets the point across that we want it delayed. I mean, obviously we want it defunded. We're not going to get that this time, but at least we can get it delayed. Keep the pressure on. Don't cave. Call the House. Call little Johnny Brainer. Call little Eric Cantnot and tell them that they are not to cave on this. And maybe even give McConnell and Harry Reid a jingle and say, hey, bring those 8 clean CRs to the floor for a vote. Clean CRs. There's 8 clean CRs on Harry Reid's table. The big super CR with the Obamacare in it is not clean. It's a jumbled mess. But there are 8 clean CRs funding specific parts of government that are not even related to Obamacare in any way, shape, or form on Harry Reid's table. Make him bring them to a vote if you really want the shutdown to end. Okay? That's what needs to happen. And you need to take the high ground with Facebook, Twitter, when you're arguing with people, use the right language, use the right points, make sense, use the facts. This is Obama shutdown. It's Reid shutdown. There are 8 clean CRs on Reid's table. Mr. Reid, bring them for a vote. Don't tell me to bring up a CR that's already been voted on and put down, you know, 2 weeks ago. There's 8 actual clean, really clean CRs on your desk. Why won't you put them to a vote? Oh, because you know what? Some Democrats will actually vote for them. You know, Eleanor right. Holmes Norton will actually support Democrats to vote for the CR that funds the District of Columbia. You know, anybody who has a high number of veterans in their district is going to vote for the CR that funds the Veterans Administration, irrespective of Obamacare or not. That's got nothing to do with it. It's not about that. It's about should the veterans be treated fairly. So get them to do it, and you keep the pressure up, and you remember something. You're an American. You are an American. That is an awesome gift and a tremendous responsibility. Exercise your freedom. It's not only that you're at liberty to exercise your freedom so far, even though it's diminishing by the day, it's your duty to exercise your freedom. You know, today the second reading of gospel was from the letter of St. James. It says, God did not give us a spirit of timidity and cowardice. He gave us a spirit of courage and love and self-discipline. Okay, whether you're Christian or not, that's still a pretty powerful statement. Take it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You're an American. You are made to be courageous. You are made to be a warrior for liberty. You are made to be an example to people across the globe of the fact that we can govern ourselves in a constitutional representative republic. And right now people are saying America's a laughingstock of the world because they shut down the government. 17% is not really a shutdown, and the only laughingstock is the POTUS who's playing games with this shutdown as opposed to doing what a smart man would do, which is come to the negotiating table, give up some of what you want, and they'll give up some of what they want, and everybody will walk away with a little bit of what they want, and nobody will be happy except the American people. That's how it's done. Make Obama do it. Tell the House and the Senate to not cave, and maybe we'll bring you a show this week if we have time because there's a lot going on, but if not, our regular time is 10 p.m. Sundays. We're winning. And when I say we're winning, we're not winning some kind of electoral victory, although I think that'll happen. We're winning for liberty. We're winning for freedom. We're winning for the Constitution. We're winning for everybody in this country, even the idiots that don't agree with us. Because when liberty wins, everybody wins. So you happen to be the one who has the responsibility of making liberty win, even for the idiot libtards that you argue with on Facebook and Twitter. Okay? So join us next week. In the meantime, call, and go to www.don'tfundit.com. This is Rex and Trog. Signing off.
And the flames of liberty never die.
The establishment will grow more and more hysterical the more powerful Rand Paul and Ted Cruz become, and they will gain strength as it's obvious that they're among the few people willing to raise the right question. You know, and I consistently have been on the side of having the courage that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have. And I think it's sad to watch the establishment grow hysterical. Christie is a very good governor.
Joining us right now, the former House Speaker, Newt Gingrich. Newt, as you know, House Republicans, they've voted 40 times to repeal, to get rid of Obamacare. It's not going anywhere in the Senate. Certainly the president would veto that. And now some Republicans are saying they are ready to shut down the government to do away with Obamacare. You believe this is a mistake. Tell us why.
Well, I don't think we should shut the government down. I think we should finance all of the government except Obamacare. And I think we should be prepared to send a bill. The House Republicans ought to send a bill to the Senate that says, here's the entire government except Obamacare. And then I think Senator Reid and the president have to decide how big a crisis they want to create, but make clear that it's their crisis. There's no desire by Republicans to shut the government down. But I also think, and I've been here in Boston talking with the Republican National Committee, we need to offer a better future in health care. And we've got people like Dr. Mike Burgess, a congressman, Dr. Tom Price, a congressman, Dr. Bustani, a congressman. We have a number of people with good ideas, and we should solidify into a Republican better future in health alternative and say, look, would you have this personalized medicine future was a chance for Obama. And I think that would put us in a much stronger position to then force the fight over Obamacare in October.
Because you know the president would veto any legislation that wouldn't fund Obamacare, and in effect, there could be a government shutdown. You lived through two government shutdowns in the 90s. As you well remember, Republicans paid a huge political price for both of those shutdowns.
You know, I thought so at the time, and then as I got away from Washington and was no longer speaker and thought about it for about 2 years, it occurred to me that that's all nonsense. The first reelected House Republican majority since 1928 occurred after the shutdown. And so I've always wondered, what is this big price that we paid? We got reelected. Nobody had been reelected since 1928.
Well, the big price, Mr. Speaker, was that Bill Clinton was reelected in 1996.
Well, but I don't think Bill Clinton was reelected because of the shutdown.
I think that was certainly a major part of it.
But he also signed the welfare reform bill.
That was important as well. But he certainly benefited dramatically in recapturing the White House for 4 years because of those two Republican-led government shutdowns.
Well, all I would suggest to you is that there were a lot of different factors in the presidential campaign, but the people who were directly responsible for the shutdown got reelected. And then nobody had been reelected. You know, incumbent presidents getting reelected is a lot more common than Republican Congresses getting reelected was in 1996. And yet almost nobody in the media wants to look at why Clinton got reelected, so did the House Republicans, and so did the Senate Republicans.
Those are fair points.
Senator Ted Cruz, I do believe, Senator, that he was sort of referring to you in some of those remarks about the extreme members of Congress, that they, the people that they characterize as extreme, shutting down the government to the harm of the U.S. The debt ceiling, how should Republicans approach that?
Well, I mean, let me commend, actually, Secretary Lew for not being willing to demagogue on the debt ceiling the way, sadly, his boss, President Obama, has. If I counted right, three times you asked him directly, come October 17th, will the United States default on its debt? And three times he avoided answering. And the reason is, the answer is of course not. And now, frankly, what I wish he had said and what any responsible president would say is you'd come out and say under no circumstances will the United States ever default on its debt. That should be the answer. But Secretary Lew at least went halfway there by refusing to repeat the claim that President Obama has made that there is some risk of our
default.
But
you would agree that it's not good for the U.S. not to be able to borrow past where it is, because at some point it will have to default. How should the Republicans handle the debt ceiling? Do you want, for instance, some faction of the president's health plan to be attached to that in exchange for lifting the debt ceiling? Or, because it's so important, should Republicans say we need to lift this debt ceiling?
Look, in my view, the debt ceiling, we should look for three things. Number one, we should look for some significant structural plan to reduce government spending. Number two, we should avoid new taxes. And number three, we should look for ways to mitigate the harms from Obamacare. You know, since 1978, the debt ceiling has been raised 55 times.
So you think that some facet of the president's health care plan should be attached to an increase in the debt ceiling?
The debt ceiling historically has been among the best leverage that Congress has to rein in the executive.
So yes?
Yes.
And what else?
But my point is that there's great historical precedent. Since 1978, we've raised the debt ceiling 55 times. A majority of those times, 28 times, Congress has attached very specific and stringent requirements, many of the most significant spending restraints, things like Graham Rudman, things like sequestration, came through the debt ceiling. And so the president's demand, jack up the nation's credit card with no limits, no constraints, it's not a reasonable demand.
How far are you willing to go? Because I'm going to imagine that a number of your Republican colleagues, as well as all of the Democrats, are going to say, we cannot mess around with the debt ceiling here. It's too important. It sends a bad message. It'll rock the economy. Let's increase the debt ceiling for X amount of time or X amount of dollars. How far would you go to stop that in order to eke out
look, in my view, we ought to have one fight at a time. So we're right now in the middle of a government shutdown.
Right, but it's all going to fold together. You would agree with that.
It may or may not. I don't think it should. I think we've still got some time on the debt ceiling, and I think right
of anger, free of pain.